This podcast was originally live streamed on the Non Sequitur Show on YouTube. New episodes air weekdays, Monday through Friday, at 8 p.m. Eastern at youtube.com/nonsequiturshow. Make sure you never miss a live stream by visiting www.nonsecshow.com/schedule. For the latest news, polls and updates throughout the day, follow us on Twitter at nonsecshow or facebook.com/nonsecshow. That's NONSEQ show. If you'd like to get exclusive content, bi-weekly private hangouts with Kyle and Steve, backstage access to chat with guests after shows hosted on your channel and much more, become a Patreon saint of Non Sequitur. It ensures we continue to improve our show and brings you into the process at the same time. Visit patreon.com/nonsequitur today while the limited spots are still available.
The following podcast is intended for those who believe bold ideas are righteous, unique perspectives are gospel, and strong opinions are sacred. This is Non Sequitur. Never follow. And now, here are your hosts, Kyle Curtis and Steve McRae.
You put a stogie on that thing, didn't you? She is.
I did.
Hooking it up. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the 200th episode of Nonsense. Hard to believe that we have made it 200 episodes, and we have no like serious illness, no known mental conditions. That's surprising. But anyway, I'm Lyle. Every time is Malfoo.
And I'm Steve McCreep. And this is Flat Earth Friday.
Oh, high five, Steve.
Yes.
By the way, do you have that book that Dr. Jinkson wrote? Are you done with it?
Yeah, you mean that one?
Yeah, just throw it over here.
Sure.
Thanks. We're so stupid. We really are. Okay, we're here for a Flat Earth debate. It's about time because we have... gone a month, I believe, close to a month without a any type of
plan. Okay, here we go.
Okay, you're gonna make this old really quick. Debating, of course, is Red's rhetoric. He is back for, I believe, I counted today, his 12th time. So welcome back, Reds.
Oh dear God.
Yep, that sums it up. That sums it up. And for the first time, we have Southern Israelite. Hello, sir. Welcome.
Cheers. Cheers. Thank you for having me.
And hosting this debate tonight will be Barry. Let's say hello to Barry.
Not quite right, Kyle. It's Jared.
Oh, Barry. it must be because I use Apple products. I'm sorry. Boy, Jared.
Oh, that's got to be. Sir? Yeah. It is a wonderful evening.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, we're gonna let you guys go for it. The floor is. Oh, wait. No, I'm not. Actually, we tonight, since this is gonna, we've set it up like Mission Control, and we've got a kind of a cool theme going. We decided that something this epic, especially on the 200th episode, should be introduced by somebody with the caliber of Michael Buffer when he does really big boxing matches. And so we enlisted the help of a good friend of ours of the show. And without further ado, I'm going to let Jamie Sislo introduce tonight's main event.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, people of all ages, welcome to tonight's main event. While that opening address is the same one given at the speed dating event's Red Frequents, I assure you tonight is for a different purpose. The two judges doing the scoring for tonight's mass debate, as they creepily look on from the dark shadows of the room, will be none other than the fabulous Kyle Curtis and glorious Steve McRae of the Non Sequitur Show. Moderating will be performed by that pedantic cross-eyed son of a bitch, Jared. Introducing first, in the blue corner, wearing the Confederate flag with an official wait of forever, as that is how long we'll all be waiting for him to produce an actual model, stands tonight's challenger. His fighting credentials include 42 followers on Twitter and 52 YouTube videos, each averaging 400 views. Without a doubt, he knows how to stick it to the man with ferocity and gusto, much like how Red does on a typical Saturday night. Armed only with a rusted, beaten-up, and decayed sword of the spirit, and his feet shod in the preparation of the gospel, in other words, a King James Bible and a pair of Nikes, being the only man on God's green earth to confuse what his senses tells him as the scientific method and the explanation his parents gave him for why, quote, he doesn't look like daddy as genetics. Presenting the challenger, Southern Israelite! And in the red corner, with his Billy Ray Cyrus-looking trainer, Sean Hufford, and obviously blind girlfriend behind him, wearing the orange sherbet-printed Endurance Light Speedo, the heavyweight contender at an ogre-stunning height of 8 feet 4 inches and the combined weight of both contenders' mothers at 545 pounds, 3 ounces of that being his penis. From the greater Tampa area, in a small adobe hut deep in a nearby swampland of Florida, any bastardly ugly ogre would be proud to call home. His professional record of 32-0, with 28 finishes through to completion, 23 finishes in 4 rounds or less, and 16 finishes in the first round, and we're not talking about debate wins here, people, proves this man knows how to deliver pure satisfaction. That record, as well as his unofficial Olympic gold medal win in facepalm-saving efforts, makes him recognized among the world over as the people's champion, from Australia to the United Kingdom to right here in these United States, and guarantees his place in the YouTube Debate Community Hall of Fame. Needing no introduction, the reigning, defending, single-finger-fapping, two-time FML champion of the world, the undefeated, undisputed, uncontested defender of the big blue ball we all call home, Reds, Red, 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 Red.
This is the first time I'm hearing this. That's pretty good. Except the end of it, he roasted Red pretty good there. This is like a Red
what
roast.
The fuck? How do you know what penis is?
I don't know, but I think we just killed everyone's hearing that watched this or ever watched this. Their high range, yep. Gone. Super.
Okay, moderating tonight's debate is going to be Jared. Not Barry. That was a joke earlier. We're going to hand it over to Jared now and let him explain how the format's going to work and properly introduce tonight's contestants. So, Jared, whenever you're ready, the floor is yours.
All right. Thank you very much, Kyle and Steve. Thank you for giving us an avenue to present this wonderful show that's about to take place. The quality of it will be left to be determined by the audience. And as everyone has heard, we have a debate between Southern Israelite and Red's Rhetoric. The topic tonight is, what is the actual shape of the Earth? Is it round? Is it flat? Is it kind of like that chubby college girl that you don't really talk about, but you know you had a lot of fun nailing? We're going to have some fun finding out on this one. So, as we have discussed in the background and agreed to, the format tonight is going to be 5-minute intros by both contestants, followed by 15-minute presentations of evidence to support their chosen side, followed by a 10-minute rebuttal towards each contestant, And then a back and forth period of 10, 15, 20 minutes. We'll see how it goes. Followed by questions from the audience. Throughout this, I am going to try to remain as quiet as possible. That will depend on the contestants themselves. If I have to step in, you done fucked up. And with that, we are going to actually go ahead and start the intros. Going first at each section tonight is going to be the guest of honor, Southern Israelite. Are you ready?
Yeah, sure.
All right, I will go ahead and start the timer as soon as you begin your intro. Have at it when you're ready.
I already made an intro video for the producer to play at 5 minute mark.
We got that.
My name is a Southern Israelite. I'm a Protestant Bible believer and proud Judaizer, descended from an ancient English family but currently residing in Tennessee. I am a British loyalist, a rationalist, a biblical deist, and a materialist. I believe in the coherency theory of truth, continuum mechanics, and operationalist philosophy of science. I believe our reality is best depicted by William Fairfield Warren in his earliest Cosmologies, where he gives his understanding of the ancient Hebrew cosmology. The proposition for the debate tonight is the globe Earth or flat Earth, which model comports best with reality. However, which reality are we talking about? The one we see with our eyes and experience with our senses, or is it the reality seen through the theoretical optics of telescopes and cameras? As we will see from our consideration of Galileo, the two are radically different. This brings me to my first argument for the flat Earth. Number one, our unmanipulated experience tells us the Earth is flat and stationary. However, our opponents have devised numerous optical and metaphysical theories to circumvent what we all experience. Galileo, when confronted with the well-known fact that Mars and Venus appear geocentric when observed with the naked eye, tells us the human eye produces a hindrance of its own, infusing the object with, quote, alien rays, unquote, which expand their size. The telescope is needed to remove the illusion, even though Venus and Mars can be seen with the unaided eye. When confronted with Tycho Brahe's naked eye observation of no annual parallax, Galileo postulated that Brahe's observation was an illusion brought about by the immense distance of the stars as he induced from his telescope observation of the Milky Way. When faced with the geocentric demonstration of the tower experiment, Galileo tells us to, quote, put aside the appearance, unquote, which he and his opponents all saw. Now, my opponent admits the Earth appears flat.
I will admit that first blood goes to the flat Earth when it comes to looking at the horizon. It looks pretty damn flat, does it not? I mean, I am going to give it to the flat earthers. On the absolute, like, razor-thin surface, it appears that the Earth is flat.
Standard academic sources admit curvature cannot be detected below 35,000 feet, and that, quote, photographs purporting to show the curvature of the Earth are always suspect because virtually all camera lenses project an image that suffers from barrel distortion. Dr. Carlo Rovelli tells us that when our senses perceive the Earth is flat, this is actually an illusion. Thus, our opponents demand that we prove the Earth is flat, when examined carefully, is actually a cleverly crafted onus probandi fallacy, demanding that we disprove that our unmanipulated experienced reality is the illusion they have invented with baseless theories and metaphysics. Number two, not simply the baseless theory, but the experimentally proven impossibility of gravity shows the Earth to be flat. The following is Amotis Tolan's argument. If there is curvature to the Earth, there must be gravity. There is no gravity, therefore there's no curvature to the Earth. The syllogism is valid in its form. All that lacks is verification of its premises. To the first premise, Sir Isaac Newton tells us on pages 528 to 529 of his Principia that from the attractions of gravity, quote, the bodies of the Earth and all the planets affect a spherical figure. To the second premise, I have written a lengthy treatise covering over 75 arguments now against gravity, but I will offer only a few here. Argument number three, As Taboo Conspiracy pointed out, when the horizon in the Felix Baumgartner footage is compared between the horizon while on the ground to the horizon at 128,000 feet, we see 100% confirmation of flat Earth. I pulled up the Walter Abislin's curvature application and made a comparison between eye level on the ground to 128,000 feet, screen captured it, lowered the opacity, and laid it over the Baumgartner scene, and as we see, the horizon should have dropped dramatically lower than the horizon in the footage if we were living on a ball. And by the way, I could use any flat Earth footage across bodies of water, even the worst, because my opponent cannot appeal to refraction. Remember, Newton's system is built on Euclidean geometry, and Euclidean geometry did not take into account atmospheric refraction. I also hold to the standard Planck's, that water seeks its level, air pressure proves the firmament, considering entropy and static fluid pressure, that the sun dog and a perihelic circle, which I've seen with my own eyes, prove the firmament, the heat spot on the dog cam sport footage prove a local sun, no north-south circumnavigation, and the solar analemma prove the Earth is flat. Thank you.
All right, good timing on that. It actually was just under 5 minutes. Next, with his intro, Red's Rhetoric.
Thank you very much. So, hello and welcome to tonight's debate. I want to thank Kyle and Steve for hosting this debate, and I want to thank Jared for moderating this debate. I'm once again tasked with showing how the round Earth model comports with reality while showing that the objections raised against that model fall flat on their face. Now, to support my side of the debate, I will be sure to avoid arguing from authority, actually, even if that authority is legit, and only sticking to observations that our little community has been able to gather over the last 4 years. Because in my opinion, the strength of our case lies not in the fact that we have millions of dollars to spend. The strength of our case lies in the fact that these observations were gathered by normal, everyday people. So, to fight against these facts would be to fight against the reality that literally anybody could verify. The only hope Mr. Southern has in this debate is to hold himself to the same standard and bring up reproducible observations that support a flat Earth. I hope that won't be a problem for him. I mean, after all, in a recent comment, Mr. Southern has said the following. I have written 13 books, dozens of essays, thousands of articles. I have men who fund me to be a professional writer for years, and now I have an almost 900-page document on why I believe the Earth is flat. Those are real academic achievements for me to base the fact that I am an advanced intellect. Now tell me what you have. What I have, sir, is a history of making flat earthers my bitch. So to make sure we don't have a repeat of Friday the 13th, let me give Mr. Southern some advice. Nobody cares how many books you've written. Nobody cares that you were paid to do it. Nobody cares about quotes from the Bible or our unverifiable opinion that everybody is lying to us. The Non Sequitur Show and its audience demand that we present tangible evidence that can be judged on its own merits. And I am sure we are all ready and willing to see what observations Mr. Southern has done, or at the very least support, that verify the geometry in question for tonight's debate. With that, mine is a lot shorter than his, and I look forward to hearing what Mr. Southern has to say. I mean, after his opening, and I relinquish the rest of my time to the moderator.
All right. And with that, we are ready for the full presentations. Give me 1 second to get the timer set up. All right. Ready when you are, Mr. Southern Israelite.
Yeah, I'm ready.
You may begin.
Okay. I was under the impression my opponent was going to be giving the reasons for his position with his 5-minute intro. It's bizarre. It seems to be there's another shift of burden all pushed on me again here. That's fine. I am so grateful to be invited to this neutral platform where my opponent doesn't have a football team of teammates on side chat foaming at the mouth to tag into this. Tonight, my opponent is going to try a number of psychological tactics that I want to reveal to the viewer. He mentioned a few of them in his intro. Lest we are beguiled by the deliberate obfuscation of my opponent, Red's rhetoric is going to try and hide his position in a cloud of nebulousness. He's going to confuse you as to what he actually believes in an attempt to lure me into his cloud in pursuit of his actual position and strike at me guerrilla style, which is cowardly, seeing his position is the one backed by the U.S. Department of Education and military. Let's see if we can flush him out of his cloud and compel him into the open arena for everyone to see. My opponent earlier said he wasn't going to make any appeals to authority, yet throughout his entire platform on YouTube, he has made many appeals to authority. My opponent and his entire entourage have accepted the telescope and modern optics as unqualified authority on reality with no retractions that I'm aware of. Therefore, seeing as we saw above from Galileo, my opponent has subordinated human experience and natural sensation for intricate theoretical notions concerning the eye and the functioning of the human brain, thus cornering himself in the scientific realist school of philosophy of science. Realism then forces my opponent to account for gravity as a mechanism, and he knows he can't. He cannot appeal to functional results or theoretical pluralism, as these are aspects of pragmatist and operational schools of philosophy of science that are in 180-degree conflict with scientific realism. He cannot appeal to mere functional vindication rather than logical validation. Thus, my opponent cannot hide himself amidst the delusion of paradigm-neutral observations. Again, my opponent and his entire entourage have appealed to the Cavendish experiment as proof for the nature and existence of gravity and appeal to authority, thus cornering himself in the Newtonian school of physics. As we read on the NASA website, on the University of Washington Big G measurement, that the Cavendish experiment was based on Newtonian physics. Not only does Newtonian physics commit my opponent to particle mechanics and Euclidean geometry, his constant appeal to the law of perspective or angular diameter is also Euclidean. And remember, as I documented in the intro, Euclidean geometry does not account for atmospheric refraction. Fourth, my opponent has made numerous appeals to the laws of motion and inertia, which I can provide copious citations for, cornering him in the heliocentric model as a whole, not simply the globe in SAN simpliciter. For Sir Isaac Newton tells us on page 401 to 402 of his Principia that, quote, the Earth, the Sun, and all the planets mutually gravitate one towards another and are therefore, according to their powers of gravity, in perpetual agitation, watch this, as the laws of motion require, unquote. He has also many times appealed to relativity.
One moment. I'm pausing your time, Southern. This section of it is actually to provide evidence for your position. For the last 4 minutes, you have failed to do so.
Sir, I gave 9 arguments flatly what my position was in the intro.
The intro was to introduce yourself.
I was told that the intro was where you present your arguments for your position. That's what I was told, and he did not do that.
The intro was to introduce yourself and to introduce your position.
No, sir, I can show you the email straight from non sequitur showing me that it was to introduce myself and to present the arguments for my position. That's what I was told.
And the presentation, which we are in now, is to provide evidentiary support for your position.
I will continue to do so. I'm simply giving an introduction. Did my opponent do anything but do an ad hominem in his intro? He did nothing but ad hominem. I can already tell this is going to be a shit show. Okay, so can I continue?
That was for the intro. I just want to make sure that you are planning on actually providing evidentiary support for your position during this segment,
intro to not provide plain and clear evidences for my position?
You made statements, you made claims. This section is to provide evidentiary
plain arguments
support
for flat earth, dude.
With no support for them in that short time span. This section is meant for that. And so far, all the points you have brought up have been attacking the opponent's position, not supporting your own.
Okay, that argument ignores the nature of a modus tollens and a disjunctive syllogism. I don't even think you know what that means, do you?
It doesn't matter.
Yes, it does. A disjunctive syllogism is a measure of a process of elimination, coming to conclusions through process of elimination. If you eliminate the opponent's position, the disjunctive syllogism is a valid argument.
Well, the debate is between Reds and Southern Israelites, so let's.
It's always going to be me versus his football team, and that's fine. I'll kick all their asses myself. That's fine. Go ahead. Come on, bring it on, dude.
Well,
hey, can I finish?
Listen to me real quick. Real quick point of order. When Jared's asking you for evidence for your own, I know what a disjunctive syllogism is. I know what monist tolling is. I understand what you're saying. However, you're fundamentally not doing what was the criteria for what the setup was for you to show evidence for yourself, not to do negative evidence for the other person. You're not, this is not saying this P or Q, not Q therefore P. We're not working on that type of paradigm. What we are doing is evaluating two independent people having their own lines of evidence to support their own positions independently of each other.
So you're saying I can't use a modus tollens or disjunctive syllogism argument. That's what you're saying.
You have a false positive dichotomy.
Let him use whatever he wants. It's going to be fine. Let him present his case.
No, he knows he's going to lose if I continue laying out my whole argument. And so that there, so what's happening is the same thing that's always happened. When I start smashing the dude in the face, his buddies start jumping in and trying to help him. Okay.
No, we're not helping
him. Can I continue?
It's a point of order.
Sure you are. That's exactly what you're doing.
We're going to let him make the argument. All right. Jared, start his time again and let him kick all of our asses.
No, that's it. That's the thing. I intended to return to running the timer so he can continue his presentation. I just wanted to make sure that he was aware that as to this point, he has not fit the format, but you still have correct the opportunity to bring it back around.
You're saying that I'm not fitting the format assumes that modus tollens arguments and disjunctive syllogisms don't exist. And I've already addressed this, dude.
Simple terminology. This section of the debate is to provide positive evidence for your side.
I'm sorry. You go ahead. Can I continue?
You can continue. Please. When you continue your presentation, the timer will continue.
Okay. When we are dealing with observations, we must understand that there is no such thing as what Dr. Thomas Kuhn calls a paradigm-neutral observation. Thus, we read in the Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy in its article in the Scientific Method, quote, theory is required to make any observation. Therefore, not all theory can be derived from observation alone, unquote. There's no better example of this than the observation Red's rhetoric has used so many times, his observation of the angular size of the sun. In his discussion with Ranty, Ranty asked Red's the question concerning his image, quote, how come the background is black? Red's responds, quote, the solar filter cuts down about 99.99 whatever percent of the light that goes through it, and so only the brightest portion is actually going to show through, which is the actual sun itself. Everything around it is going to be black, unquote. And so we see Red's observation of the sun is not a paradigm-neutral observation. It is a theory erected from a baseless understanding of light and a theory of optical imagery that is admitted fiction, as Goldstrahan tells us in Helmholtz's Physiological Optics. So, to deal with the argument on gravity, I have already given evidence for my first argument that the unmanipulated experience tells us that the Earth is flat, and this is actually something admitted by my opponent. I will now move to the second argument, which is there is no gravity. It is a modus tollens argument. If there's curvature to the Earth, there must be gravity. There is no gravity, there is no curvature to the Earth. A modus tollens argument is a valid form of argumentation. So, I've already demonstrated from Sir Isaac Newton that, yes, curvature requires gravity. Gravity is the mechanism for curvature. That is what he absolutely admitted in the Principia. Since my opponent uses the Cavendish experiment, he appeals to that authority. I'm going to use that authority against him. All right, so why is it that I do not believe in gravity? Again, I've said many times that, or I've already said it before, that I have a booklet where I list 75 arguments against gravity, but I'll just list a few here. Number one, of course, there's no mechanism, and that's admitted. Number two, as directly admitted by Sir Isaac Newton, the concept of space, absolute space, and force is Neoplatonic Christian theology. You can read that in page 36 of Newton's Principia. You can also read it in his Optics. You can also read in Sir David Brewster's Memoirs of the Life, Writings, and Discoveries of Sir Isaac Newton, volume 2, page 278 to 279, where he states that the fixed point that Newton mentions in the Principia is God the Father, whose frame of reference defines what absolute space is. But my opponent doesn't believe in the omnipresence of God, which is exactly what Newton said space was. My opponent doesn't believe in God the Father, so he can't believe in absolute space either. I mean, we could just end the debate right there and it's over, but we'll continue. Number three, the Cavendish experiment. The Cavendish experiment is based on fixed points in absolute space, which are impossible on my opponent's position. Remember, Newton admits in Principia, page 78 to 79, that there are no fixed points or states of rest in reality. He said it was something that you would have to abstract. It's not something that can actually be demonstrated from reality. And number two, my opponent cannot account for space and absolute space, as these are theological notions that Sir Isaac Newton mentions blatantly in the Principia. Number four, there's missing tides in the Mediterranean Sea and many places all around the world where high tide comes in 10 to 12 hours after the moon passes the meridian. And the typical answer to this is, oh, this is because of the Strait of Gibraltar. But when you look at the Red Sea, the Red Sea has a similar thing called the Bab el-Mandeb, yet the Red Sea has 2.5 to 3 feet of tides. It's absolutely impossible. And the places in the world where you can look where high tide comes in 10 to 12 hours after the moon passes the meridian, Holyhead, Pentland, Firth, Dublin, North Foreland, Needles. You can also go to Fiji and Ascension Island where low tide comes in when the moon passes the meridian. Number five, the basic physics of thermal expansion requires the sun to admit an eccentric and expansive force, not an attractive force. The baseless theoretical, metaphysical, and prehistoric notion of atomism has been rejected by modern science, as attested by Michio Kaku. Thus, mass is also a meaningless concept. All right, next. I could go on for hours on that point right there, but I'll spare it for brevity's sake. The next argument I want to make concerns the Felix Baumgartner footage. As I stated before, from Taboo Conspiracy's great demonstration that he made, we see that the horizon should drop. If you go to the Bisling curvature application, the horizon should drop dramatically more than it does in that footage. And my opponent's going to try and blame the horizon on Felix somehow leaning the gondola perfectly in proportion to the falling horizon, while somehow sitting still at rest with his back against the seat. It's going to be some mental gymnastics. I can't wait to see how he gets around that. And again, like I said, I could use the worst flat earth footage on YouTube or whatever, because my opponent cannot account for atmospheric refraction. Euclidean geometry doesn't include atmospheric refraction. The next argument, water seeking its own level. I recently found a section in The Pyramids of Egypt by two Egyptologists, Idon and Edwards, where on page 9, we read that in order to determine a flat base for the pyramid, what the ancient architects would do is they would dig trenches, fill them with water around a certain area to define a flat surface. So yes, flat means level. And my opponent, what he's going to try to do is he's going to try to define level according to a plumb line. But the problem with a plumb line is a plumb line assumes upon a fixed point in absolute space, which he can give no account for. Newton admitted physically it doesn't exist, and the space and absolute space are theological notions that my opponent doesn't even believe in. So he can't appeal to that. Now I've heard him use this argument where he shows a shelf crooked on the side of a wall, and he'll say, is the shelf level? Is the shelf flat? And he'll refute the idea that level means flat. What he's doing is he's conflating the surface of the shelf with the circumstances and configuration of the entire body. Obviously, when we say the oceans are flat, we don't mean the water under the surface. We're just talking about the shape of the surface. So that's a conflation of categories. The next argument, static fluid pressure and entropy proving the firmament. I heard the debate that my opponent had with Jim Panda and Galen Dav, and they were talking about how equilibriums would preclude pressure gradients. But basic physics, if you look at static fluid pressure in any basic physics book, it'll show you a static fluid is an equilibrium, but that equilibrium contains pressure gradients. So pressure gradients do not preclude the flat earth argument for the firmament. Also, my opponent does not believe in Newton's definition of a vacuum, so he can't appeal to a vacuum either, because in Newton's Principia, he refers to a vacuum, he uses it synonymously with space and void. in space is a theological concept that my opponent doesn't believe in. So he can't appeal to a vacuum. And the third proof for this argument of air pressure is my opponent can't appeal to gravity, because I've already refuted gravity. My next argument, the tower and ship mast experiment. Galileo's dialogue talks about how when you drop a rock down from a building, he says it always falls perpendicularly. And this refutes the idea of the motion of the earth. And he also does another, he mentions another experiment, Galileo in his dialogue, of the ship mast experiment, where you drop a rock down from a moving ship, it does not hit the mast. It does not drop all the way to the base of the mast. It actually moves more to the stern, as Galileo admits in his dialogue. Now, it's been complained, oh, well, this experiment here, this isn't done in a vacuum. Yet, if you look at the Sly Sparkane video of him tossing a rock in the air, which my opponent has actually used in one of his debates with a truth seeker, that was not done in a vacuum. Yet, that they say that proves Coriolis effect, so they can't appeal to a vacuum there either. Really, they can't appeal to a vacuum at all because they don't even believe in a vacuum. Because vacuum is a theological notion. The nature of the sun dog. And again, I've seen these with my own eyes. You don't need a telescope to see these. You don't need cameras to see these. According to the globe theory, sun dogs are created when the sun is near the horizon and on the same horizontal plane with ice crystals and the observer. The light is bent 22 degrees outward and upward, creating the sun dog. So the source of the light is the sun. I have three observations that contradict this. Number one, sun dogs are seen deep inside river valleys. You can Google the sun dog at Bow River in Calgary. You can see them in the front of a mountain, in the shaded area of a mountain in Park City, Utah, the sundog picture. And you can also see, if you go to YouTube and Google the sundog in Moscow, you'll see the sundog in the background will actually appear in front of buildings, in the shaded area of the buildings. This was, I learned this from Zeteticism.com. There's some brilliant arguments that he made. Okay. All right, and as I've shown from William Fairfield Warren's depiction of the Earth, which I think that's the most accurate, the concavity above the Earth and at its periphery is the same. So that would perfectly explain both the sun dog and the perihelic circle. Now, the dog cam sport footage. The dog cam sport footage is an absolutely devastating argument because I did an experiment with light, which I can produce later, where I did a experiment on a flat sheet, and I did an experiment where I've reflected light off of a ball. And on the flat sheet, the sun reflection looks exactly the way it looks off of the ocean. But my opponents will say that the heat spot in the sundog video is a reflection. Well, that's impossible. We've seen how the sunlight reflects off the ocean. So number one, the heat spot's too small to be the reflection of the sun and the satellite. If you look at the satellite footage of the reflection of the sun, it's actually the size of, it's about 700 miles long. If you look at it, you can go to the Electro L satellite, Himawari. It's about 700 miles in width. The heat spot in the dog cam footage is only about 10 to 12 miles long or in diameter. The heat spot's a different color. The heat spot is a different opacity. The heat spot is located somewhere where you never see the reflection on the satellites go. If you look at the Himawari, you look at Electro L satellite, okay, you'll see the sun reflection orients itself at the equator or just above it, in between the equator and the Tropic of Cancer. Sorry. So they have no basis for saying the Baltic Sea heat spot is a reflection. And I relinquish the rest of my time.
All right. With that, Red, are you ready to give your presentation?
Yeah, I am.
All right, the timer is ready. When you begin, it will start.
Okay. Let me go ahead and show Southern Israelite how it's done. Notice how in my entire presentation, I'm not going to attack him. I'm just going to present evidence for my own, because that is actually possible when you believe the facts. All right, let's talk about the round earth model. To start off, let me draw your attention to that big thing above your head called the sky, because the fact is this: what you observe above your head, or actually how you observe above your head, can tell you a lot about what is under your feet. An equatorial mount is a mount for telescopes and cameras that compensate for the Earth's rotation relative to the sky. It works by having one rotational axis parallel to the Earth's axis. The advantage of an equatorial mount lies in its ability to allow the instrument attached to it to stay fixed to any celestial object while driving only one axis at a constant speed. This mount works so well that it's used by astrophotographers because it corrects for field rotation, which is a huge benefit because field rotation will ruin any long exposure shot. But in my opinion, the most beautiful thing about the EQ mount is that it works, and the implications are massive. When trying to model the EQ mount working as it does in reality, it must be placed on the surface of a sphere. With that, I direct your attention to link 1 in the description. When modeled to comport with actual observations, including the observation that the EQ mount actually works, the only model that results in zero contradictions is the round Earth model. To make matters worse, or better, depending on which side of the debate you're on, it also verifies the size of our spherical Earth. Because if you were at the north celestial pole, the axis of your mount would be pointing straight up. Move to the equator. The axis will have to be turned by 90 degrees in order for the EQ mount to make those epic observations again. The distance between those two points, along with the difference in angle, allows us to get a value for the radius of the Earth. So not only does this mount have to be placed on a sphere, it has to be placed on a sphere the size of the Earth to comport with reality. And if you disagree with the math, try it on a basketball and see if it doesn't give you the correct answer for the size of the basketball. These observations are key, as was demonstrated in my last debate against Jaronism. But for the sake of being thorough, let's go over something again. Link 2. On October 1st, 2017, fellow YouTuber SliceBarkane posted a video where a bunch of volunteers from all over the planet measured the altitude angle of the sun during the equinox. Their goal, again, was to find out if the round Earth model would agree with the data gathered from their observations. So participants in 9 different countries conducted the simple observation, which is very similar to the Eratosthenes observation done over 2,000 years ago. Using the latitude of each participant, the sun's elevation angle was measured during solar noon for each location. These angles were then placed on a sphere to see if the angles corresponded accordingly. Spoiler alert. When the lines of altitude were plotted, the only model that resulted in zero contradictions was the globe model. This observation even verified the accepted size of the globe, because the stick lines, which are the lines that were perpendicular to the Earth's surface during the observation, all converged to a point being the center of a sphere, and those measurements were used to calculate the size of our globe. However, this observation also hinted at a sun that was extremely far away. So if that could be verified, then Sly's observation is rooted in reality to an even greater extent. If you wish to learn how one would figure out the exact distance to the sun, there is a video on my channel that educates Jaronism on the methodology, link 3. But the exact value is not important here, so we will move on. Lucky for Slice Barkane, his data points comport with my observation I did in my video, Zeteticism.com versus the sun, link 4. The sun has a known angular size of around 0.53 degrees that even flat earthers will agree with. Gee, I wonder how they got that size. Maybe they used the solar filter and they trust its values? If you were to look at the sun through that solar filter and track it all day long like I did 2 years ago, as Zeteticism.com himself was trying to do, you would see that the sun would remain the same size in the frame. This makes sense, because if the size of the sun asserted is the size asserted, and the distance asserted is the distance asserted, we would not expect to see any shift in size as predicted by the law of perspective, which, by the way, is basic trigonometry that anyone can verify with pen, paper, and a ruler. You don't need to go to any authority to use pen, paper, and a fucking ruler. So observations done in reality confirm what we would expect to see from a distant sun. And that distant sun comports with the observations done by Sly and his volunteers showing the size and shape of our Earth. Now, this is where it gets good. When you compare the values of Sly's equinox observation and the EQ telescope observation, they all converge on the same answer for the size and shape of our Earth. So, not only do we have confirmation, we have multiple lines of confirmation, and all without having to run to NASA and spending millions of dollars. However, if you are a little well off and have some epic support, hashtag Reds fans are the best fans, you can obtain some equipment that will allow you to see the Earth's curvature directly. On August 20th, 2018, I made a few observations with my DJI Mavic Pro, Link 5. Not only did I observe horizon drop with altitude gain, which comports with the round Earth model, by the way, but I also took a still image at 1,638 feet. Curious thing about that image, flat earthers were quick to say that image showed a completely flat horizon. In other words, not CGI. But when you compress the image from left to right, you will see that there is curvature in the image. To make sure this wasn't a fluke, I contacted Sliceberg Kane to verify that the curve being shown comported with the round earth model, Link 6. When modeled with the correct height, field of view, and the quote, assumed size and shape of our planet, my image matched exactly. It's also worth noting that this observation was done while looking out into the Gulf of Mexico, so the classic it's just the terrain excuse isn't going to work here. But DJI isn't done yet, because fellow YouTuber Sean Hufford also did some observations with his drone, Link 7. What he did was very simple. He had his drone set at altitude and waited till the sun was visible during sunrise. As soon as the sun was just visible, he dropped altitude and the sun disappeared again. The geometry of a spherical Earth predicts that this would be the case, and when it was tested, it turned out to actually be the case. In fact, I did the same thing with my DJI Mavic Pro, but with a sunset, not a sunrise, so slightly different, but same concept, Link 8. When my Mavic Pro gained altitude, the sun that had already set came back into frame, and you could watch it set again. You know, as predicted by the round Earth model, winky face? That observation was done between 5 and 400 feet. But I plan on doing this observation again with higher altitude. When that becomes available, it will be linked in the description down below. Now I jump to what is some of the best evidence for curvature of the Earth. And that is Soundly's Lake Pontchartrain Causeway observation, Link 9. The length of the causeway makes it possible to see the curvature of the Earth directly given a clear enough day. When the atmospheric clarity allows for it, you will be able to see the causeway literally curving with the Earth. These observations were also filmed with the flat earther camera of choice, the Nikon P900. And if that is a fucking problem, someone should tell Ranty that. And I intend to repeat the observation myself once I get a Nikon P1000. Once that video is live in a month or two, I will link it in the description down below. What is amazing here is that this observation was virtually modeled with the assumed size and shape of the globe. And when you compare the computer renderings to what was actually observed, they match as expected, perfectly. This shows that the round Earth model made a prediction, and that prediction turned out to be the case. Don't have a long enough bridge? No problem. Any large body of water should allow you to see curvature directly with the help of a visual reference, like with a ship. Now, it was mentioned that there is atmospheric refraction in the world, and that is the case, but there are clear days. They do exist, much to the disappointment of every flat earther on our beautiful round Earth. So if you make your observation on a clear day, then you will see what a user by name of MC the MC1 was able to record, Link 10. Listed in the description of this debate again is the video I referenced in my last debate. It shows a tanker ship being partially obscured by the horizon, yet with absolutely no visual limitations via the atmosphere. This observation was done on a very clear day, and it's also worth pointing out that we have enough angular sights to work with when it comes to the shipping question. Are lenses and cameras and Nikon P900s now picky choosy about what they observe now? Therefore, the only reason why the ship would be partially not visible is if something was in the way. And that video clearly shows it's the water that's in the way. The very same water that finds its own level? I guess level doesn't mean flat. This isn't anything new. This observation has been done for centuries. And when you look at all the evidence presented, you find one thing in common, actually multiple things in common. They all converge on the same answer for not only the shape of the Earth, but the size of the Earth as well. So observations done in reality confirm the size and shape of our Earth. These observations can be repeated, and if flat earthers cared about the truth, they could verify it for themselves. As I said at the beginning, the strength of our case lies not in the fact that we have millions of dollars to spend, or that we know some great scientists personally. The strength of our case lies in the fact that these observations were gathered by normal, everyday people who are sick of seeing the constant bullshit from the Flat Earth camp. I now relinquish the rest of my time to the moderator.
And for the record, there were 5 minutes left on the timer.
You're welcome for that.
All right, so now we will actually go into the rebuttal portion. I'm resetting the timer to 10 minutes. Southern Israelite, when you are ready, the timer for your rebuttal to what Red has presented will begin.
Okay. Ready? Okay, so my opponent. Okay, so my opponent made. I can get my made six arguments: equatorial mount, Slice Barkane's observation of the sun, angular size of the sun, his drone footage at 1638 feet, Lake Pontchartrain boats over the horizon. Okay, so as far as the equatorial mount goes, as I have demonstrated in great detail in some books I've recently written, telescopes are not reliable observations of not reliable instruments of observation of the celestial bodies. I have authority from Helmholtz's Physiological Optics, we see that all optical imagery is based on fictions. In going through Galileo's sidereal messenger and in his dialogue, I have a document here where I have 20 examples of this, but I'll just stick to a few just for brevity's sake. Number one, Galileo admits that consideration of the heliocentric conceptions of Mars and Venus should show these bodies 60 and 40 times as large when they are close to us in their orbits as when they are opposite the Earth in their orbit of the sun, yet no such observation is made with the naked eye. That's in his dialogue, Third Day on Mars and Venus. My opponent, secondly, this is probably I could just end the whole debate right here. The whole modern optics is built on Galileo's intricate theory concerning the human sensation, perception, and the function of the human brain and the eyeball. And there's no modern theory on what sensation or perception and how it produces abstract ideas even exists. I would refer the listener to the case of a man named Mike May. He's a skier. He was a man blinded by a chemical explosion at the age of 3. At the age of 46, his eye was restored to perfection. However, his sight was not restored. After having his right eye restored to normal, his vision still was only 20 over 1,000. This phenomenon has baffled modern science. In the psychology textbook, fourth edition, Hockenberry and Hockenberry on page 93, we read, quote, "Where does the process of sensation leave off and the process of perception begin? There is no clear boundary line between the two processes as we actually experience them. In fact, many researchers in this area of psychology regard sensation and perception as a single process. Modern science does not know how to distinguish sensation and perception, yet the case of Mike May demonstrates there is a blatant distinction. So my opponent's optical theories are baseless. I then must ask my opponent to define sensation and show how it produces perception and abstract ideas. And this is a very intricate theory that you guys came up with on the nature of the eyeball and the human brain, so have fun with that. Next, in the Assayer, Galileo tells us, quote, "The use of a telescope is always the same," unquote. Yet in the Sidereal Messenger, Galileo also tells us that the telescope does not magnify celestial bodies in the same degree, saying that the telescope, quote, "is powerful enough to magnify other objects 100 times, will scarcely render the stars magnified 4 or 5 times," unquote. The same phenomenon was also admitted by William Herschel in the account of a comet. There's also a recent time lapse of the sun. Zeteticism.com did it. I can show it to you later, where you see camera footage shows there's a reflection of the sun behind the sun as it moves to the horizon. Now, either cameras are unreliable instruments of observation of celestial bodies, or that was a reflection off the dome of the flat earth, as Zeteticism.com would maintain. Either way, it's completely damning for my opponent's position. Number two, Slice Barkham's observations of the sun, which, again, as they all do, assume upon the distance of the sun. Now, I have a detailed account of the distance of the sun and how it is to be determined from the work of Percy Brigman. Let's see. Pull this up real quick. All right. So this is Percy Brigman was the math and physics professor at Harvard University. I mean, first, as we all know, there's all kinds of affirming the consequent fallacies and assuming that the Earth's a sphere and how big it is. But we've already heard that stuff so many times. I want to get to what Percy Brigman said. Percy Brigman is probably the most definitive writer on physics in the 20th century. This is from his Logic of Modern Physics. And I'm on page, let's see here. He makes a distinction between tactual space and optical space. So the first argument that he makes is that the parameters of length are physical operations when constructing a measuring stick. which we call tactual space. The second is this theoretical notion of light, which he calls optical space. The next argument is the positions of optical space are arbitrary, seeing space is infinite and can only be defined dialectically. Thus, optical space is baseless, seeing the space needing to be measured and defined through Euclidean geometry is empty. Next, he says there's a huge difficulty of defining time. That's on page 72 of his work. He says he also mentions how radio waves are a form of light. You can also read that on Cosmic Perspective, page 148. And so they also can't be used because they would fall into the same problem. And he says that the percentage, the probability that we know the distance of the stars, pretty much any celestial body other than the moon. He says the moon is an exception, but any celestial body other than the moon, the probability that we know the distance is 0.1%. That was his exact quotation from The Logic of Modern Physics. Now, moving on to the next argument my opponent made, the angular size. Again, this assumes on Euclidean geometry, which does not account for atmospheric refraction, is absolutely pointless. You hear these guys talking to us all the time. Oh, don't you understand the law of perspective? It's 2 arctan over the actual diameter of the body over twice its distance. Well, where is atmospheric refraction taken into account? Secondly, again, the angular size was used with a solar filter. This is a theory. These are all theoretical notions. This is not paradigm neutral observations. Okay. And these theories concern the nature of light, and my opponents don't have a definition of what light even is. Both the corpuscular theory and the wave theory have been refuted. The wave theory was refuted in 1902 to 1905 by the experiments of Philip Lenard. The next argument, the 1638 feet drone footage. This is just, we already read from an expert, David Lynch, as I documented in the intro, that all of pictures that are purport to show the curvature of the Earth are subject to barrel distortion. That's number one. Red's rhetoric is not a expert on camera technology. He has no expertise whatsoever to overrule David Lynch. David Lynch is not here to defend himself. So this is just another way to say there's curvature to the Earth at the y-axis, but, you know, supposedly you can't see curvature until you reach 35,000 feet. It's just, this is just, they're trying to overrule experts on things that they don't know much about. And secondly, I would say that the Felix Baumgartner footage that I showed earlier completely debunks the idea that the horizon falls. As we saw from the ground level footage where Felix Baumgartner was grounded up until 128,000 feet, there's no drop in the horizon. Number five, the Lake Pontchartrain demonstration. Let me get my notes out here. All right. So in the debate between Nathan Thompson and Red's rhetoric at 5640, Red's admits this is a hump. He admits it is a hump before the observer. Yet when the Brazilian, recent Flat Earth Brazilian documentary was made, which I don't agree with everything they're saying, all I'm saying is there's one argument that they make about this reservoir, where they took GPS measurements of the water level in the reservoir, and it showed there was absolutely no hump. There was no rising of the water level. And on volume 8 of Team Skeptic's video on the Brazilians, he says, Father Skeptic denies that the heliocentric model, quote, requires objects to rise in elevation as it follows the curvature. From all points of view on a sphere, all other points will appear to fall away in elevation, unquote. And then he goes on and says, the Earth doesn't hump up in the air. And okay. So it's either there's a hump or there's no curvature. I mean, this is some form of camera distortion. As you see, Johnny Oops video on it, he shows that it's perfectly straight, and even at the end of the line of power lines, they actually angle up, not down toward a curve. The boat over the horizon, I've taken detailed
30 seconds
details. Okay. My opponent again has to deal with atmospheric refraction. He doesn't. He doesn't give any distances in his measurements. The equation for refraction assumes the Earth is a sphere. And you don't see any tilt of the boat over. And the emblem on the side of the boat is actually mirroring on the water, showing there is atmospheric distortion happening in the footage of my opponent. And I relinquish my time.
Yep. Right as the timer finished. All right. Red, you have 10 minutes. Timer is set. Begin when you're ready.
All right, sounds good. So let me go ahead and go through the fallacies that my opponent just committed. To co-fallacy, when you accuse your opponent of hypocrisy instead of actually addressing the argument. Personal incredulity, when you find something hard to understand, therefore you conclude that it isn't true. And the genetic fallacy, when you judge the truth of a claim from where it comes from rather than on its own merits. And also an anecdotal fallacy, when you use personal experience rather than actual compelling evidence. I find it funny that this philosopher would find himself guilty of so many fallacies in such a short period of time, which is actually quite an achievement. So congratulations to you, sir. First off, did you know that you mentioned GPS during that one documentation that you stated? What does GPS stand for? Oh yeah, Global Positioning System. Did you know that's also based off of satellites and light? I guess we actually do have our shit together when it comes to how light works. So much so that we can actually make lenses do pretty much whatever the hell we want, including getting rid of that chromatic aberration that plagues so many earlier model telescopes. But the first thing I want to point out to you is when you were addressing my equatorial telescope mount observation. Straw man, you made a total straw man of my argument. I wasn't talking about the observations that the telescope is making. I was talking about how the telescope was being used and the angle at which it had to be used based on its longitude and latitude, based on its position on the Earth. You have not demonstrated any mechanism on how a telescope can rotate on one axis on a flat Earth and yet still keep that celestial object in the frame. Whether the celestial object is bending, distorting, all fucked up, in the shape of a swastika, whatever makes you feel better at night. The fact is that it can see it by pointing exactly at it. Please describe to me the geometric impossibility that is an equatorial telescope mount working on a flat Earth. Please tell me how an equatorial telescope mount placed anywhere on the supposed flat Earth can rotate on one axis yet keep celestial objects in the frame. You have not gone into that. The only thing you decided to say was you can't trust telescopes because reasons. And then I bring up another thing, some hypocrisy in your arguments. So you basically don't believe any footage that's brought to you because it's filmed through a lens. You don't believe any footage because supposedly we don't have a theory of light or how light bends or how light refracts or whatever the case may be, even though we have detailed explanations and mathematical equations that describe this shit, allowing us to make objects like, for example, the Hubble Space Telescope, which allow us to see all the way to the Hubble Ultra Deep Field. But put all that aside for now. Put all that aside for now. So you basically don't believe any footage that's brought to you by cameras. Okay. No. Then in that case, I guess we can throw out your Felix Baumgart observation. I guess we can throw out any observation from Ranty. Basically, we can throw out any argument you just gave us where a camera was used. I have to follow a standard? Well, so do you. Speaking of standards that we have to follow, you said that I cannot overrule the experts. I cannot overrule the very influential people that you have mentioned. Okay. Two can play at that game. Can you overrule Scott Kelly? If you reference Michio Kaku, so you must actually trust him, if you asked him what the shape of the Earth was, what would he say? What would Scott Kelly say? What would Mark Kelly say? What would Buzz Aldrin say? These guys, if we want to ask what the shape of the Earth is, we should ask these guys, right? So if I can't overrule these very influential people, these very influential experts, then neither can you. I mean, after all, if you're not going to pay attention to the arguments I made, but you're simply going to quote from other people besides me, then guess what? I can play at that game too. And when I do, I can reference NASA, JAXA, SpaceX, ULA, Boeing, Sierra Nevada Corporation, and Rocket Lab. And believe me, they're all on my side, and they are far beyond what Newton could ever have imagined. Moving on. You say that the tilt on my ship observation is less than 1 degree. Yeah, no shit. Because in order for 1 degree to actually show in the tilt, the ship would have to be over 69 miles away. 360 degrees. Take the distance. Take the circumference of the Earth. Divided by 360. That's 69.169 miles per degree of change. And not only that, it would be tilting away from you less than a degree. Have two pencils. Put them on the other side of the room. Tilt just one of them less than 1 degree away from you. And tell me if you notice a difference. If you say yes, then you're lying through your fucking teeth. Next, you brought up sundogs and how it's evidence for a dome or whatever. Well, apparently we smashed through the dome and it's not evidence of any sort of atmospheric pressure or anything like that. Because the fact is that whether you agree that rockets make it to space or not or stay in orbit or not, I have filmed them. I have seen what they do, which is also visible to the naked eye. You see the gases expanding as they're gaining altitude, which shows the lack of atmospheric pressure that is being exerted on them. At change in atmospheric pressure, getting lower and lower and lower as the air gets thinner and thinner and thinner, as you're gaining altitude, yet the rocket not smashing into anything, shows that you don't actually need a firmament, you don't actually need a boundary in order for atmospheric pressure to drop to an eventual vacuum. Also, you brought up gravity. Actually, sir, I disagree with your summation of gravity that, oh, a sphere requires gravity. No, it doesn't. It's the mass that causes the gravity, not the shape of it, you idiot. Okay, so take a rock. It's all lumpy and malformed and whatever. All right, that would have gravity. But the reason why gravity is irrelevant is here is because gravity is irrelevant to the shape of the Earth. Whether the shape of the Earth is caused by gravity or unicorn pixie farts, it doesn't matter. I'm arguing about the geometry of the planet. Please don't bring up irrelevancies such as gravity, because the gravity of an object and the shape of an object is irrelevant. Look at the Rosetta Stone mission from ESA. It dropped a probe on that comet due to the comet's gravity. Question, was the comet round? No? Great. Then stop making this terrible argument. Next, you mentioned that, it's theoretical, the way the solar filters work. Actually, no, it's not. It's testable. If you have a flashlight and you point that flashlight right at a solar filter, you will be able to see a perfect outline of the rim of the flashlight, showing exactly what we want to see, just the rim. If you do the same thing with the sun, you see just the solar disk. So is it telling the truth for the flashlight but not telling the truth for the sun? Is Nikon picky and choosy about what it's looking at? Has it been hacked by NASA? I guess we'll never know, because apparently you can just dismiss any footage without giving any credible reason as to why it is. You also mentioned the dog cam footage. I love the dog cam footage because there's a sphere. It shows the Earth curving. So if we're going to pay attention to the sunspots, which I will admit I have not looked that far into, you also have to look at the footage as it is as a whole. So if I can't explain the sunspots, which I'll go ahead and admit, I'm going to go ahead and, or hotspots, I'm going to ask you to explain why there is a curve in the image when you say that the Earth is flat. Thanks for interrupting me.
Sorry, I didn't know I was.
Yeah, you're supposed to shut up and let me finish. So, as I was saying, you also want to bring up barrel distortion. Well, there's a small problem with that. That can actually be tested. And when testing the Nikon P900 against grid paper, as my friend Kara did, you would see that there's actually no distortion to the straight lines that are placed on that grid paper. So, if there is barrel distortion in reality, then explain why there is no barrel distortion in a test that's looking for barrel distortion. Put a GoPro next to it, you're going to have a fucked up time. Put the P900 next to it, there is no barrel distortion. I guess that argument falls flat on its face as well. So when it comes to the equatorial telescope mount, you did not bring up anything to get it. You brought up two quo fallacies, personal incredulity fallacies, the genetic fallacy, and the anecdotal fallacy. And on top of that, you did not go into details about why all footage is you know, therefore false, or why it only works for you but doesn't work for other people. You pay attention to some experts, but not the rest of the experts that say that you're wrong. Experts that, by the way, have more knowledge and more tools and resources than the ones that you cited. And also, you don't really take into account that the tilt would be less than 1 degree at the distances that we're looking the ship. You didn't bring into account that the ship being observed over the horizon was actually seen on a very clear day, thus no atmospheric refraction to deal with, therefore doesn't actually need to be taken into account. Honestly, I could go on. I hope in your rebuttal, you do a better job than what you have been doing. I relinquish the rest of my time to the moderator.
All right. Well, that definitely ended with a flurry. And the next bit is the back and forth. So let's just go ahead and get right on into it. And to get things rolling, I will actually go ahead and pose a question to get it all started. And this is going to be directed at you, Southern Israelite. Mm-hmm. Let's start with a simple yes or no. Is the shape of the Earth measurable? If not, why?
You talking about the radius of it?
Any part of it.
Sure.
What's your methodology for finding out the shape and size of the Earth?
I already mentioned what my philosophy of science was. I'm an operationalist. I follow Piercy Brigman. You could do a tape measure.
So you measure the curvature of the Earth with a tape measure?
What he calls tactual space.
So you measure, how would you measure the Earth with a tape measure?
You'd have to get a really long piece of tape.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what about the equatorial telescope mount? If I'm at the North Pole, and I actually need to have that equatorial telescope mount pointed straight up and down in order for it to work properly, go to the equator, I then have to...
Determine your latitude and longitude by looking at the celestial bodies through the telescope, right?
No, I can just look straight up, actually. If it's rotating directly above me, which can be seen with the... Polaris can be seen with the naked eye, can it not?
Yeah.
Okay, so just using the naked eye, not looking through the telescope, you would align it at the north celestial pole, and it would have to be perfectly straight up in order for it to work correctly.
Citation needed.
Sure, I'll give you the manual of every equatorial telescope mount ever sold. But while I'm getting that, let me finish explaining. If you're at the North Celestial Pole, you would have to point that the axis directly straight up and down in order for it to work properly. If you were to go to the equator, and you would have to tilt it 9 degrees in order for it to start working properly again. If you were to measure your distance between those two points, which since you mentioned GPS, you see it as a valid form of measurement, and you were to make those two measurements, could you not then figure out what the circumference of the Earth is and then its radius?
I was under the impression that the latitude and the coordinate system was done through looking through the telescope. So I'd have to examine the manual you're going to send me.
Okay. But just following the methodology as it is, just for now, if you were to have a equatorial telescope,
I don't know that. I'm not going to make an assumption on something I don't know. I'm not going to
you're
telling the truth.
Well, I'm not asking you to assume that I'm telling the truth.
Have
I'm
you
asking
done it yourself?
Yeah, I have. I have used an equatorial telescope mount many times from here all the way to Canada. It does actually work. Granted, I didn't go all the way to the North Pole, but halfway there, I say that's good enough to get enough data points, is it not?
Fine.
Okay. So if we were to take this on board, for the sake of argument, would that work?
Well, one thing, from what I remember reading from Ptolemy's Almagest, he said that the Earth is a perfect sphere because the altitude of the stars moves in a regular fashion as you move all over the Earth in any direction. And if that's the case, if that's how you're getting your coordinates with the equatorial telescope, then you'd have to abandon the theory of the oblate spheroid.
I'm not bringing up, you know, the oblateness of it, and the oblateness is actually pretty slight, but...
You're determining the coordinates. Go ahead.
No. I'm the way I'm determining my position on the planet is simply by looking up. That's it. I don't pay attention to any of these imaginary lines that the nameless faceless they decide to give us. Pay no attention to that. Fuck them at this point. I'm talking about how the stars move above you. If you look directly overhead and the stars are doing a perfect circle directly above your head, then you would be at the North Celestial Pole. If you start seeing the stars moving perfectly from horizon to horizon with the center line being right on top of you, then you would be at the equator. Is that not a valid way of figuring out where you are when it comes to the North Pole versus the equator.
Well, look, Ptolemy already did that, and that's why he said the Earth was a perfect sphere, because it moves perfectly. What the words he says is a regular fashion. The way that the stars ascend in altitude and descend is in a regular fashion in any direction you go. So if you take your theory of equatorial mounts, you're going to have to abandon the oblate spheroid. And once you that, you're going to have to abandon gravity, because that would require centrifugal force and a hump at the equator.
The gravity is irrelevant to everything I'm saying here. I'm just talking about where we were.
Everything.
It actually isn't.
Then why do you quote the Cavendish experiment? Why do all your whole entourage quotes the Cavendish experiment?
Because in the conversation where we were actually talking about it, it was relevant to the discussion. It's not relevant to the discussion.
You told me yourself Cavendish experiment proved gravity.
No, I said it proved gravity, but I didn't say it was relevant to whether or not the Earth is a sphere. Please find me one quote where I said that there, because gravity, therefore sphere, or because Cavendish, therefore sphere.
I don't have to. I quote Sir Isaac Newton, which is what the Cavendish experiment
me.
Is based
That's
on.
Your biggest problem. That's the biggest problem. No. This is why I said
you
that
cited
you
the Cavendish experiment. You're citing
this is
Newtonian
why I said,
physics as an authority.
This is why I said that you would be guilty of straw manning, and literally everyone is seeing it right now. You are more happy to go to other people who are not me instead of focusing on what I myself am saying in this debate. In other words, you're designed to demolish a straw man rather than actually dealing with the points that I actually brought up.
Okay, you still have not faced what I said. You cite the Cavendish experiment. You have to hold Newton as an authority.
No, I don't actually, because what I hold as the authority is the actual evidence that I presented in my debate. And guess what? Not only that, but where did I bring up gravity in my opening? Oh, I didn't. Where did I bring up Newton in my opening? Oh, I didn't. Where did I bring up Newton in my debate with Jeremy?
You didn't make any arguments in your opening, dude. You didn't make any arguments in your opening.
Even though you yourself listed six of them, right? So clearly you were either not paying attention or you're lying right now.
I listed nine.
Are you basically saying that, oh, because this whole thing doesn't fit my perceived notions of how I think you should be arguing, I'm now going to push their quotes onto you and ask you to defend them? Because you realize that it has a fallacy.
You have cited the Cavendish experiment as an authority, and the Cavendish experiment is based on Newtonian physics. Anyone here who is honest knows that's the case and knows that you are just buck dancing right now in front of all these people.
You see that straw man you just blew away? That was amazing. How about you actually deal with the argument that I'm actually bringing
saying
up?
Saying the word straw man doesn't prove what I said was a straw man.
Actually, no. Describing how it's a straw man. And I will go ahead and describe it to you yet again. When I bring up the equatorial telescope mount and how it works, that does not rely on whatever the fuck Newton told us, and that does not rely on gravity. And yet you are bringing up Newton and gravity when I brought up the EQ computerized telescope mount. So guess what? Now you've been caught in a fucking dishonest tactic where you are going to just straw-man the ever-living shit out of me instead of actually dealing with the points that I brought up. This is how you plan on winning the debate?
No, if you base your latitude and longitude on your eyeball, you're going with Ptolemy's Almagest, and Ptolemy's Almagest speaks to this issue directly. If you use your eyeball to do latitude and longitude, he's going to tell you that those coordinates are going to give you a perfect sphere, and you can't have a perfect sphere on your model.
I don't care whether it's perfect or not. The fact is that it's an extension
of gravity. It has to do with the relevance of gravity and centrifugal
force. And I don't care about gravity. Another straw man. So
that is not a straw man. That is
how
what
many
Newton's
straw mans are you actually going to build in this entire debate? You're not going to actually listen to anything I say. Why are you even here?
Did you or did you not cite the Cavendish experiment?
You are engaged in some debate, but you're not engaged in this debate.
If that's what you have to tell yourself to feel superior to me, Reg, you go ahead and do that and save face in front of your friends. And by the way, are they all on side chat ready to help you out?
Yes. Do I have? They are, and they're actually not helping me out. They're just laughing at you.
Okay,
I can read you some of the things that they've been saying.
Oh, I love the hatred. But again, will you admit, number one, that you admitted that the Earth looks flat upon sensation?
Upon sensation? What the hell does that mean?
Your experience tells you the Earth is flat. You admitted it. I quoted you twice.
Well, I have to know what you mean by that. Give me something to chew on.
I quoted your words word for word in the intro of this debate.
Oh, yeah, the one where you only took partial context out of it. Yeah, I did say that.
Right, in a five-minute intro, I can't play the whole video.
Yeah, you want me to give you the whole context, though, the one that you conveniently omitted?
Sure, go ahead.
Cool. The fact is that, yes, when you're doing just the dumbed-down basics where you're just looking straight out and not doing anything else, yeah, it looks flat. Mm-hmm. Keyword, looks. Have you ever heard the saying, looks can be deceiving, and when you look closer at something, it may not be as it initially appears?
Right. So you're holding to a scientific realist position of philosophy of science, which would mean you have to account for the mechanism of gravity.
No, that is, again, another straw man. And by the way, can I have ranch with that word salad?
Straw man doesn't prove straw man.
No, no. What proves a straw man is me describing to you how it is a straw man. Do you wish me to do it again? Because this would be like the fourth time.
No, all you've done is assert that I've proven anything.
No, no, I actually can. Would you like for me to do it again?
Sure.
Okay, good. So once again, and please listen closely this time, me bringing up how an equatorial telescope mount works has nothing to do with gravity. It has nothing to do with Newton. No, it doesn't. Because guess what? Whether the Earth is a sphere because of gravity or unicorn pixie farts, the only thing the equatorial mount cares about is the shape of the object that it is on. The shape of the object that it is on is irrelevant to gravity, as demonstrated by the Rosetta Stone mission, which, by the way, they landed a lander on this rock. And guess what? That rock had gravity. Question, was it a sphere? No. Then stop using this really fucking retarded argument and stop making connections that simply do not exist. We're at the level of numerology. That's how stupid this fucking shit is.
Not at all. All the audience that's honest knows. Now, what do you do with taboo conspiracies?
Tell me, honest audience, is he being honest right here? Let's actually ask them. Is he being honest
I didn't say the audience was honest. I said those people who are honest in the audience.
Okay, so, those who are honest don't have any comments.
Conspiracies, Felix Baumgartner footage.
Are you going to answer my question first or no?
I already discussed this numerous times. I told you what I'm going to say to the equatorial mount.
Okay, so you're not going to bring up anything legit. I want to make sure I'm hearing this correctly.
You are not
going to actually address the equatorial telescope mount observation that I brought up previously. You're just going to cite irrelevancies
I have shown the unreliability of telescopes as observing celestial bodies. I said that numerous times. I did not say that camera lenses and all optical imagery is useless. I said when they are being used to observe celestial bodies.
And I gave numerous reasons for that. Yeah, and guess what? I did not bring up the observations that the telescope was making. Again, another straw man. Congratulations.
Yes,
I'm talking
did.
About
you said no, when I, you're no, looking through the telescope, I you get your frame of reference through I looking did. Through the telescope and looking at a celestial body. Yes, you did.
I did it. Well, so let's go.
We'll rewind the video and we'll hear you say it.
Time out. I do have to correct you on that, Southern Israelite. When you asked if he used the telescope to sight in, his answer was no.
No, he said that after I pushed him on viewing it with his eyes. He said yes.
Before I pushed him on that, he admitted that
he gets his frame of reference looking through the telescope.
Initial question.
Body.
No, he said he would set it up.
We'll rewind it. I'll make a video about
it. It was at that point that you asked him, how are you sighting it in? And the answer given was not by looking through the telescope.
After he already admitted that's what he did do. It was through the telescope.
After your first question, he gave that answer.
And also, to clarify, let me say this, is because when we were looking, quote, through the telescope, I think you forgot how I said was, it doesn't matter how the light is distorted, whether it's a squish skewed in the shape of a swastika, whatever the case may be. I really don't care. Make it the shape of the Confederate flag for all I give a shit about, okay? Or General Lee's face, whichever makes it easier for you to get the picture. The fact is that when you're looking through it, the point is that it can make a observation. I didn't say an accurate observation, as in that's the actual shape it is. What I meant to say was, or what I actually said was, is this, that the angle in which you are is based upon your position on the planet. How can that work
on a flat Earth. We didn't get that far yet because you decided to bring up something as irrelevant as gravity. Gravity has nothing to do with the geometry of the planet, just like gravity had nothing to do with geometry of the Rosetta Stone meteor.
Okay, I quoted Sir Isaac Newton directly from the Principia saying that gravity is why... He's talking over me because he knows. Look,
I quoted a theme of thousands. You quoted a theme of one.
Okay, I'm saying again.
I quoted a team of thousands of scientists, and you quoted one guy from the 1700s.
Which all those scientists they based their lives on the writings of Sir Isaac Newton. Dude, what are you talking about?
Yeah, like, your misapplication of his writings doesn't mean that they all make the same mistake you do. My God, is that a level of arrogance?
His writings doesn't prove it was a misapplication of his writings. He said blatantly in the Principia that
you saying that gravity equals sphere is actually you misapplying it.
No, he says very clearly that from these attractions, the Earth takes a spherical figure. That was his words in the Principia. Now, what are you going to do with the Felix Baumgartner footage, Reds?
I'm going to ask you one more time to go ahead and make a complete fucking mockery of yourself. So gravity equals sphere, correct?
No. I'm just citing what Sir Isaac Newton said, and you know it.
I want to know what you think. Gravity equals sphere. That's what you honestly believe, right? Let's hypothetically say gravity was a thing. That would mean sphere, right?
The mechanism of gravity in its theoretical understanding requires the mass it is manipulating it draws it toward the center symmetrically. You as you say, at 90 degrees, your plumb line thing, and so it's going to create a sphere. He says it very clearly in 528-529 Principia. These are his exact words. Quote, from these attractions, it is that the bodies of the Earth and all the planets affect a spherical figure, unquote.
Good. Now also look up hydrostatic equilibrium and tell me what you think.
Yeah, it makes your whole position impossible. If the planets are at hydrostatic equilibrium, then there's no more force to attract other bodies around them.
Hydrostatic equilibrium means that once an object is capable to pull itself into a spherical shape, you're not going to get that with all objects, dude. So just because an object has gravity, it may not have enough of that gravity to pull itself into that spherical shape, which is why that's why I said gravity has nothing to do with the shape of an object, and that proves it. You will go ahead and acknowledge one part of it, but you will not acknowledge the whole story because it completely debunks the bullshit narrative that you're trying to push.
I'm not pushing. I'm just quoting authoritative sources in your tradition, and you've quoted authoritative sources.
Misapplying it, of course. Everyone agrees Congratulations. And
there's a difference between interpretation and sight. All I did was cite from the Principia. If you have a problem with that, that's your problem.
Yeah, no, I don't have a problem with that. I have a problem with your understanding of gravity and how it does not in any way, shape, or form have anything to do with the shape of an object. It just doesn't. Otherwise, by your own reasoning, the Rosetta Stone comet that it was landing on should have been round. Question, was it round or did it look like a lopsided potato?
Okay, so are we going to move on?
Did it look round or was it a lopsided potato?
You're wanting me to address something I haven't looked at. Some comment observation? I've never heard you use that.
Is it a lopsided potato?
I have no comment on the comment observation you're coming up with. I no comment.
So you can't look. So if I showed you an image of this object, would you tell me if it's round or if it looks like a lopsided potato?
Look, the fact that reality doesn't comport to your theory is not my problem. That's your problem.
Do you want to see if it looks like a lopsided potato or not?
No, not really. Why would I want to see that?
Because what you're seeing is an object that has gravity and yet is not a sphere.
No, it doesn't have gravity. That's why it's not a sphere. If it
did, it wasn't an influence. Oh, really? So, and you're basically
going to quote
from somebody from the past that couldn't even make it to low Earth orbit, but you're not going to reference the thousands upon thousands of scientists that actually worked on this fucking thing who are standing on the shoulders of giants. Some of them you're actually referencing.
My physics textbook from the Cutnell and Johnson standard physics, the whole thing is based on Newton's physics, man.
Congratulations on cherry picking like a motherfucker. I give you that trophy. I'm asking you to look at the complete picture and bring it to 2018.
cherry picking from citing the Principia of Sir Isaac Newton. That's cherry picking.
No, wow. No, cherry picking the entire scientific body of knowledge. That's where you are cherry picking. And I fucking dare you to say that you're not doing that.
You cannot appeal to them because you cited the Cavendish experiment, which is based on Newtonian physics.
Why the fuck not can I appeal to them? They literally achieved their objective. They literally did what they set out that they were going to do. How can I not appeal?
I've always been told that the NASA rocket technology is based on Newtonian physics.
The NASA rocket technology is based on
a foundation. As a foundation, as a first step.
So then it's not irrelevant. It's not
true. But not in its entirety.
Yeah, come on and help him out, Jared. I know he's bleeding.
Jared, hang on.
Felix Baumgartner footage.
Hang on.
Let's go. Come on.
Hang on. Come on. Hang on.
We sat on your one.
I said, hang on. Oh, no, hang on. Sure. Hang on. I know that you're foaming at the mouth, dude. Let me finish. Jared.
His ass whooping like a man.
Hang on. I'm almost there. Let's try this again. Jared, please stand down. His asshole's bleeding already. We're just going to nail the final blow, okay? So listen, Southern, at this point, thanks for being such an easy opponent. So let's go ahead and move to the Felix Baumgartner observation, since you're not going to bring up anything of relevance to the Equatorial Telescope Mount. So I'm just going to leave that as TBD. Sounds good enough to me. So let's go ahead and look at the Felix Baumgartner observation, and I have one question for you. Was that camera on a gimbal of any kind?
I'm not sure. It doesn't matter. Really? Because the comparison is not between gimbal and non-gimbal. It's between what the image at ground level and the image at 128,000 feet. So what changed between ground level and 128,000 feet?
Okay.
Laughing.
Okay. I concede. You win that round. You win. I have no response for that.
What is the relevance of the gimbal?
Oh, God. How are you going to fucking know that the camera is going to be the exact same orientation when you're swinging it from a rope attached to a balloon and there's no gimbal mechanism, man?
He's sitting there at rest. On. The guy's sitting there at rest. There's no swinging or tossing.
Let's go ahead and look at this sitting at rest thing, guys. I'm going to post a link and it'll be pasted in the description, and you can tell me that's not swinging, right? But hey, eyes are part of the conspiracy, right?
hold on. Dude, when he's standing on the ledge, the gondola looks like it's angled backwards, not forwards.
Oh, boy. So let's
Are you going to address what I just said?
Yeah, guess what? When was the initial observation taken? When it was on the ground?
Dude, there was a camera footage
from the ground. Yeah, was the initial case taken on the ground? Is the answer yes to that question?
You saw the footage. He's on the ground, yes.
Yeah, which is why I'm wondering you're having such a hard time answering this very simple question. Was the initial frame that you referenced when he was on the ground, yes or no?
Yes, of course.
Okay, good. Now we can move on to the next thing. See how easy that is when you answer questions? So now, when he was up, what was the only thing keeping that dude in the same orientation, if not the ground?
What was the only thing keeping him in the same orientation?
If not the ground.
You're talking about what's keeping him from wobbling back and forth?
No, what's keeping the horizon at the same level as it was on the ground? Because we know that the ground is keeping him stable. What mechanism is there keeping him so rock solid when it's a pod attached to a balloon with a rope in between that's allowing him to swing?
I don't understand the question. You're just a bunch of word pasta.
Okay, yeah. I'm the one committing word pasta. Okay. Can I just say I concede and we'll just move on?
All right, fine.
Sounds good. Let's go ahead and move on to one more thing. And that is the observation that I gave when it came to direct observation of curvature. So you said that you aren't going to automatically reject all images filmed by cameras, okay? So if I go to, for example, hang on. So if I go to Lake Pontchartrain to Lake Pontchartrain Bridge, mm-hmm. and I film mm-hmm. using a camera, what methodology do I have to use that will make or break my observation? Please tell me.
What observation do you need to make?
No, what methodology do I need to apply in order to make or break my observation when using a camera? How would you do the observation to confirm or deny the curvature when looking at the bridge?
I have a citation from Morris Klein's work for you on the development of
non-Euclidean geometry. I'm asking you personally,
non-Euclidean geometry that will explain atmospheric refraction and how it relates to perspective. You would have to create a non-Euclidean geometry. Morris Klein's, I have citations from his works if you want to get into that. If you're gonna deal with the atmosphere, you gotta build a non-Euclidean geometry.
Okay, so I ask the question again. How would you go about doing the observation so that you can actually trust what is being presented to you on the screen?
I would have to sit down for years and develop a non-Euclidean geometry that takes into account atmospheric refraction.
Okay, and if you were to do this observation day after day after day after day, all through all kinds of atmospheric distortion, and yet not on a single day does it look any less curved than it actually is, what would that tell you?
Nothing, because if you're not dealing with atmospheric refraction, atmosphere can distort the image. And I mean, dude, you seriously believe there's a bulge in front of you at Pontchartrain? You really believe that?
I agree with the footage is showing me, and I also see that it comports perfectly with, you know, renderings of what it would look like given the curvature of the Earth.
Well,
so
no,
that's,
I mean,
quite if, a, that's quite to your a buddy, coincidence, don't you think?
According to your buddy, Father Skeptic, and the recent book that was written by Robert Sungenis on the flat Earth, they all say the same thing. There can be no hump to the Earth. Everything falls down from your perspective if you're on a sphere. They both say that. There can be no hump.
Do you even know what I meant when I said the word hump? Did I mean it in a simplistic sense because I was discussing it with a flat earther, or did I mean it in a literal sense?
You didn't distinguish the two. Buck dancing,
then,
man. You're totally then, buck
then,
dancing.
Then stop trying to bring it up if you don't know in which context I use the word. So in other words, you've just been assuming this entire time, and you're showing yourself to be the biggest jackass right here, right now.
If that so makes you feel better, to tell yourself that. You go ahead.
Oh, believe me, I won't be the only one telling myself that. Believe me. Okay. Everyone else will be telling you too. Okay. So when it comes to the curve of the Earth, relative to you at altitude, the curve would have to rise up to meet your eye level, your eyesight, your line of sight, because that's how lines will work when they become tangent with the surface of the Earth. That tangent point will eventually have a fallaway point. That fallaway point is what is being observed with the Lake Pontchartrain Causeway. And that's not observed on one day. That's observed on multiple days, in multiple conditions, and multiple temperatures during multiple times of the year. And in some of those cases, and in some of those, the atmosphere clarity is so crisp and clear that the only thing that would make it better is if it was filmed in 4K.
So you're saying that between you and the towers is space.
Between what?
So between the observer and the towers is space.
What towers? I'm bringing up a bridge.
There's no atmosphere.
I'm bringing up a bridge. What towers are you talking about? It's a bridge. It's a causeway. Lake Pontchartrain Causeway is the
Lake Pontchartrain. I'm talking about the electric towers.
Electric towers? I'm talking about Lake Pontchartrain, the bridge, the causeway. Soundly, it doesn't do that. Soundly was doing the causeway from the hotel balcony with two Nikon P900s and a telescope. That's the observation.
Discussing the row of electrical towers at Lake Pontchartrain.
No, I'm talking about the bridge. The bridges are a lot better than those fucking towers. I'm talking about the entire bridge as a whole. I linked it in the description of this debate. The entire bridge. Well, the entire bridge has a point where your line of sight becomes tangent with it, and you can literally see it curving with the Earth. And if you drive that entire bridge, if you drive it, you will see that it stays at the same level above the water the entire way through. And the best part about it is that This has been done in multiple temperatures, at multiple dew points, at multiple times of the year, and yet they all converge on the same answer. That bridge is curved. Sure, there may be some debate as to how much it's curved, but it's curved nonetheless.
Well, if you look at the Johnny Oops footage, the electrical towers are, there's no hump. And at the very end of the towers actually angle up. They do not angle in the sense that you need, where they're angling over, or they're angling down under over some curvature.
Be sure to post that link in the description, and then the people will be able to see which piece of evidence is more profound.
Let me cite it. It's the Johnny Oops Flat Earth Proof Lake Pontchartrain. It's right at 54 seconds. You can see the towers are perfectly straight, but at the very end, when you're looking through all bunch of atmosphere, the towers actually angle up. They don't curve down.
Cool. One last question. What would it take for you to agree that the Earth is flat, or what would convince you, I should say?
Yeah. I've already done that in great detail. Here, let me bring up my pole to pole. It is a north-south circumnavigation along a continuous longitude. It's right along the longitude between Perth, Australia, and Buenos Aires, South America.
So if you made that flight, you would agree that the Earth is a sphere?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And is there anything else?
Anything else?
Yeah, anything else, I mean, that if we were to...
There would be no need to do anything else after that. I mean, that would solidify it completely.
Okay, so, but other than that, there's nothing that we can do closer to home that doesn't involve a $30,000 plane ride? Or however much it is?
Well, I don't think most people believe the Earth is a globe because of things they do around them. They believe it because of some pictures NASA's given them.
Which are beautiful, I might add.
It's the east 116 longitude down to Perth, and then South Pole back up to the North Pole along the west 58 longitude. That would do it. It's a continuous longitude.
Sounds good. Can we get questions from the audience now? I need a drink.
I was just about to say we have hit that time.
Mm-hmm. I not only need a drink, I need multiple drinks. We could either do one or two things. There are some questions in the Super Chats. We could read those, which we will get to at some point, or we can take we can take questions directly from the audience. It's completely up to you guys. How do you want to do it?
Super Chats! Super Chats! Super Chats!
All right.
Go ahead and do that. Okay, after that, there was a question that Philip Weinberg brought up. Well, it was a point that I can phrase into a question for him that is for Southern Israelite.
Why don't I do that? Yeah, go ahead.
Right, so we'll start there.
There's some questions. Awesome. Go ahead.
Yeah, so Southern Israelite kept asking about refraction with Euclidean geometry. Have you heard of, want to make sure I want to get this right, Fermat's principle?
No.
Well, the reason why that was brought up is because Fermat's principle actually does account for refraction with Euclidean geometry.
Well, that would contradict the Applied Optics Academic Journal. I mean, I got my information from the Applied Optics Academic Journal on that point. I can cite you right from.
Well, there's a couple things on your refraction I think was kind of strange. Maybe you can elaborate a little bit, because this goes with Snell's law and Fermat's principle. You're saying that there's a refractive index in a medium, and yet refraction only occurs at the boundary conditions of a difference between density of mediums, correct?
I am saying that Euclidean geometry does not take into account refraction.
I'm asking you about the boundary conditions.
Well, Newton's system is based on Euclidean geometry, and that's my
position. I'm not asking about Newton. I'm asking you about what you're saying. Are you saying when you're talking about refraction occurs because of a difference between mediums, the density? So it happens at the boundary conditions, correct?
I did not get into any details on the nature of atmospheric refraction. That, from as far as I understand, there is no non-Euclidean geometry that has been worked out to account for atmospheric refraction.
Maybe we're using this term differently. What do you mean by Euclidean geometry?
Euclid's geometry, the elements, man. Wait.
Okay, so you're thinking Euclidean geometry means like air, fire, wind, that, right?
I'm talking about Euclidean geometry, dude. I'm just making a citation from a well-known, peer-reviewed academic journal, Applied Optics, Volume 44. They clearly say that Euclidean geometry did not take into account atmospheric refraction.
Okay. Moderator,
trying to play an intimidation game so that you can circumvent what I said.
Well,
that's called an appeal to intimidation, Steve. Come on, you're better.
I'm trying to understand them for the audience. Hang on, I'm trying to understand it for the audience.
I'm saying I don't understand it, and no one has worked out a non-Euclidean geometry to explain it as far as I'm aware.
But what do you mean when you say that phrase to the audience? What are you trying to impart to the audience by what you mean by Euclidean versus non-Euclidean geometry? Because they've got a little confused on this, because what they're understanding it to be and what I know it to be are not quite the same thing. So maybe you can help us out.
The basic difference is, all right, fine. So, I mean, if you read Morris Klein's work, Mathematics, Laws of Certainty, he focuses on the difference between Euclidean and non-Euclidean being a dispute over Euclid's fifth postulate. And the other thing, of course, that if you have two lines where one of them, the angle is below 90 degrees, that somehow they're going to intersect. After a while, they'll intersect. And
okay, so basically a triangle is going to be 180 degrees, but a non-Euclidean is going to be greater than 100 degrees.
The law assumes that there's infinite lines, and there's a big dispute over the reality of infinite lines. And so, Euclid's fifth postulate was taken, was rejected. And then you have, of course, with Einstein in his context, you have this massive change between this idea of particle mechanics where we're living in space to Einstein's idea that we're living in a continuum, and that's again presents problems for Euclidean geometry. And again, I'm not aware of anyone who's actually worked it all out. I'm still studying on it myself.
Okay, that's apparent. Jared, does that answer your questions?
Don't give little snide comments like that, Steve. What did I say that was wrong? What?
You're throwing out these. I mean, you're literally asking me this question because you're throwing out these things that you're using jargon bomb that you know that most people in this audience
are probably
not
using jargon bombs. I'm quoting from academic sources.
Okay, but you're quoting things from. Do you realize that this is 2018? Okay, Newton is not the method we use by what we have when we want to model certain.
Then you can't use the Cavendish experiment. Then you can't use the Cavendish experiment. That was an 18th century experiment. It's all over the internet right now.
The Cavendish experiment can stand on its own merits, you idiot.
We can still use
it. It's still 18th century.
It'll still be a successful experiment, will it not? Wait, correct me if I'm wrong, Reds. If we redo the Cavendish experiment, which they do every so many years, does it not produce similar results and they they basically get to higher precision of G each time?
Yes.
Higher precision. Yes. Within a certain range. Okay.
Correct. The value that
we can do an experiment over again.
Yeah, hang on. The value that Cavendish found is not the value we use.
Right. It was a little off, but it was a good estimate, was it not?
Good shit.
Yeah. What is the law of the pendulum, Reds?
Law of the pendulum.
Yeah. What's the law of the pendulum?
I have no idea either.
That Cavendish experiment's based on? What is it?
The law of the pendulum. I have no idea. All I know is that pendulum.
The period of the swing is proportional to the square root of the length of the pendulum. And if you're going to use that,
I never heard it called that. I don't refer to it as that.
Dunning-Kruger. Dunning-Kruger.
Yeah, hang on. Speaking of Dunning-Kruger, I went ahead and sent a link in the live chat for the product manual for the Orion Cirrus EQG equatorial mount. Please tell me where the word gravity is in it.
Dude, I'm not going to just comment on some document you're just throwing at me. I'll need to look at it.
It tells you how to use the mount. Please tell me where the word gravity is in it.
I will look at that and get back to you on it. Email it to me.
You can't use Control F.
I'm not going to comment. Go ahead.
I'll go ahead and give you the answer. It doesn't. Go ahead.
Why would it? What does gravity have to do with an equatorial mount at all?
Jared, go ahead.
Like, literally, how does that even factor in?
Steve, that means you shut the fuck up.
Steve, we can get to the super chats, and there are a couple questions that did come from them directly. So your choice if you want me to read them or if you guys want to.
I can read them. I can read some of them. Okay. So the first one, Shadow, $5. Oh, my God, that intro was freaking phenomenal. I laughed my ass off. Yeah, it was good. Thank you, Shadow. Kyle did a really good job of that. I did a minor tweak here and there, but yeah, he really worked on that quite well. Insidious Viz, remember, is 2018. I said that already. Yes. Cousin Ned, screw me dead. Why the flip does Southern have to be such a flipping moron? I don't know. Flat earthers, morons. I don't. They're subset of each other, I guess. Steve Ellison, Steve, make him eat that word salad. $2. I will bring something up after these super chats because I think that he was flawed from the very beginning, which I'll get back to in when we're done. 0132132. Someday flat earthers will learn that things fall down. Today is not that day. 616. I think he meant 666, but maybe input it wrong because he always put 666. Freddy Fourfingers, $2. Glad I bought beer and whiskey for this. Oh, dude, you need some harder shit than that, brother. Dude, really? Yeah, you need some at least a double malt scotch or something. Just we are having an after show.
Drink away would that be good butter, too. Steve.
We are going to be drinking tonight heavily on the after show, which is on my channel. Link is in the video description, or excuse me, in the live chat. Yeah, we got to drink this butthurt away because I'm butthurt.
There you go,
Ronnie D. 1970. The Mr. Idea Flat Earth. Wow, $2. That's an insult to Mr. Idea. Mr. Idea at least really he wrote some Kindle stuff too. So Shadow, $2. Does Newton believe in alchemy too? Yes, he did believe in alchemy. We don't reference old scientists on new revelations. So when we know about things like gravity, Newton had no concept of many things. So when we do have things that are contingent upon basic Newtonian mechanics, when you have here things like the Navier-Stokes equations and things like that, those are all differential equations that Newton really didn't mess with at all. He didn't understand what gravity was the way Einstein understood it. So we use Einstein's theory of relativity, GR. That's our theory of gravity. We don't use Newtonian. So when they say that things are predicated on that, yes, but that doesn't mean that Newtonian physics is going to explain things that we know have to take into account gravity or high velocity when you're near like C or 20% of speed. Of
buoyancy.
Speed.
Buoyancy.
Is that wrong?
Buoyancy.
Yeah. Well, that's another thing. Yeah, he asked me before. When you talk about hydrostatic equilibrium, by the way, dude, hydrostatic equilibrium is when you have a pressure going down this way, like from atmosphere. You have the pressure from the volume of the fluid itself, right? And then you have the weight of the fluid. These are all in actual equilibrium, so the volume of the water is not changing. That's all hydrostatic equilibrium means, right? Okay, so Bram S. SL1, $5. The shadow recast on the moon and the difference in night sky at opposite hemispheres proves this planet can only be a globe. That's a question we can probably get into. SI, how does the flat Earth model that, right?
Are we talking
how
about
does
eclipses?
It explain? Yeah.
Is he talking about eclipses, eclipses right?
The shadow. The shadows. When you have moon.
The phases of the moon.
Phase of the moon. The shadow would be the phase of the moon.
Right. I would take the different, I would explain it the same way I would explain the eclipses. There's other dark bodies in the heavens. That was Cleomedes, first century, believed that, Anaxagoras, 5th to 6th century. Dark bodies explain lunar eclipses. That's been known for thousands of years.
Again, 2018?
Can we get something
a little modern? Yeah, I mean, at least in my life expectancy in the last 48 years would be nice.
Truth doesn't change.
You know, we do learn things.
Yeah, correct. But our understanding of reality does.
Yeah.
And not if it's true. Not if your original theory was true. Why would it need to change?
Okay, then show it's
true. So how do you have – if everything's changing, how do you have constants?
Pi is a constant.
I'm not saying it's not, but if you're saying everything's changing, then you can't have constants.
Philosophical.
Hang on. No, that was a misquote. We did not say that everything is changing.
Well, Carlo Rovelli.
Can you just stick to what we're saying for once in your fucking life? God damn.
Yeah, you Carlo don't Rovelli know where you're at. I mean, you're debating something that's not even here.
Wait a minute. Southern,
I'm so confused.
Is Carl Rovelli on the panel right now?
What is the relevance of that question?
Is Carl Rovelli on the panel right now?
Well, yes I'm or no? citing, bringing him in through authoritative citation.
Is this person part of this conversation?
Is he here right now talking to you?
Through extension, yes, because right you did not think up these ideas. These ideas were thought up by other people. You just believe
So by extension, can you tell God to tell me when the fuck my $100 million is coming?
Well, he hasn't told me yet, man. I mean, it's not in the Bible, man. I can only know what the Bible says. Right.
So, do you go to a doctor when you're sick?
I know what the Bible says too.
Hardly. No, I had a horrible sickness over the past year, and I actually, me and my friend figured it out, and I went to 5 different cardio specialists, and it was actually the study of my friend Josh and I who actually figured my problem out. So I have a very low.
Was it difficult drinking urine?
Where is the evidence of these dark bodies? Let me just start there. Where's the evidence of these dark bodies?
Did it involve drinking urine?
They're looking right at you on the moon, man, every night.
I'm going to take that as a yes.
So basically,
dark bodies.
You're looking at them when you see the eclipses. There they are.
Yeah, no, what I see is the shadow and the moon that's always been there. So where are these dark bodies?
Yeah. Well, if you want camera footage of them, that would contradict my theory of telescopes, but I do have footage of them. See it.
So you don't believe in camera footage then?
Of celestial bodies, that's a problem. There's too many problems with the camera footage of celestial bodies. It's just it's too many problems.
So
but, I mean, there is a guy who made a video on Barnum and K2 that shows them.
Hang on, you'll believe a camera's picture when it shows a Dodge Challenger Hellcat just tear an ass from 2 miles away through a Nikon P100, but you won't believe it when it shows Saturn's rings.
Right, and those were the complaints that were made by Galileo's academic opponents when he brought his telescope over to what was his name, Maggini's house. Those were the exact words that they mentioned. Go ahead.
Perfect. I just want to make sure that
the telescope was reliable when viewing things on the ground, but not in the sky. That's what
I just wanted to make sure that you are indeed committing the special pleading fallacy. Thanks for confirming that.
Oh yeah,
how is that?
But here's the thing: We also have confirmation through infrared, ultraviolet, X-ray, gamma ray, and other types of radio waves. Those don't have, if you're seeing there's a refraction, you need to demonstrate how all of them get refracted the same way. Good luck with that, because that would be impossible.
Okay, so the reason why it's not special pleading is because you can test things that you're looking at on the ground. You can hold them, manipulate them. You can make sure and see them with your own eyes and see that the things that you're looking at through the telescope are the same as what you're looking at in real life. You can't do that with the celestial bodies. That's why it's not special pleading.
Okay, hang on. That's actually true. Let me go ahead and apologize to Southern. You're not committing the special pleading fallacy. It's just personal incredulity fallacy. Thanks for correcting me on that.
Minor,
it's not personal incredulity. So, there's many people. I got this idea from Professor Paul Feyerabend, who taught philosophy of science for 30 years.
When you find something hard to understand, then you conclude that it is
not personal incredulity, dude. That's academic source, dude.
You just described it.
Paul Feyerabend. Okay.
We're moving on to the next super chat.
Enough. Here we go. So we're moving on. But SI, if you want to quote these people, bring those people in here, because we can't cross-examine something that is just your word about what somebody said. That's all just anecdotal evidence to us. You need to bring them in.
All Feyerabend against method. You can read it. It's free online.
Go with the next super chat.
All right. Mark Biesner. Red is using his time to present actual evidence for his position, so he has already won by default. This can end now. $5. I agree. I have no idea what SI presented for his own argument. I listened to everything he said, found nothing that he presented as evidence that actually supported a flat earth. Not a single thing. If I missed something, please correct me. If anybody's out there,
SIM2,
what did he say that was evidence for a flat earth? Because I did not hear anything.
Number one, what our experience. Number two, the impossibility of gravity. Number three, Felix Baumgartner footage. Number
Those
four,
no,
water
no, no,
seeks
hang
level.
On,
number
hang
five,
on,
air
on,
pressure.
I heard everything you said.
Irrelevant.
Nothing you just said is evidence for your position. You do not understand the difference.
Saying it's not evidence for my position doesn't prove
Listen
it's not evidence for
carefully.
Me.
Please don't interrupt
me. No, the fact is not evidence for your position.
Please do not interrupt me. Okay? I mean, for God's sake, people, I'm not interrupting you. Let me finish my sentence here.
I thought I was debating Red's rhetoric.
We are the moderators, and it's our fucking show. So shut the fuck up. Oof. Everything you just said was, again, not evidence for your position. Do you not recognize the difference between evidence for your own position and a counter evidence or a negative emphasis against somebody else's position?
I've already addressed that with the arguments of modus tollens and disjunctive syllogism.
Okay, do you recognize that disjunctive syllogism is it must be a dichotomy such that both of them can only be the cases? If I say, do you want chicken or duck for dinner? If you say, I don't want duck, that means chicken because of P or Q, not Q, therefore P. But that means you still can have steak in reality. So just by showing that his position is wrong, that doesn't necessarily make your position right. You're setting up a false disjunction here, right?
Okay, so by disproving gravity,
you admit
I'm
it's
saying
a false disjunction.
No, not at all.
I'm
not explaining
it to you.
No.
How could it not be when there's other? It could be a triangular shaped Earth, for Pete's sake. There are other options.
Go ahead and bring up gravity again, and all of its irrelevancies.
Okay, I'll say what my argument was is that if there's no internal pull that is stabilizing the universe, then there must be an external influence that's stabilizing the universe.
Who
cares
why
in other words, you don't know what a false dichotomy is or a invalid disjunctive syllogism. So let's move on. Bo Hill, because I know you got time constraint. Yeah. Bo Hill, SI, provide evidence for the possibility of flat Earth 25 DKK. Can't. We have already established that. Size strike, $5. And now Steve. I remember what positive claims sounds like. Thanks, Reds, for reminding me. Again, you asked the audience about what they're saying. Nobody thought you have any evidence for your claim. Nobody. I still don't know what you've said that is any positive evidence. You're relying on the fact that if you prove him wrong, you're right. And that's a false disjunction. Freddy Four Fingers. All
us.
Flat earthers are. What's that?
I was just saying, it's not just us. Like, it's not
It's the whole audience. Yeah, everybody.
Everybody. Everyone feels.
Can I just demonstrate something real quick? Not to stample, sure. Not to trample, I should say, on the super chats.
Yeah.
Okay. Southern, are these two separate questions? I'm not asking you to answer them. Just tell me, are these two separate questions? Why is the Earth a sphere? And is the Earth a sphere? Are those two different questions?
Logically, yes. Yeah.
Okay, so those are two separate questions, right?
Right. Yeah, but if you try to only hold one of just that's called logical positivism. Logical positivism. You can't believe in telescopes with logical positivism.
When you
adopt scientific realism, then you are adopting a burden to show causal mechanisms. You can't just avoid that issue.
Okay, so you agree, again, after that word salad, that they are two separate questions, right? Do you agree that those are two separate questions, right?
No. I'm not going to say the word separate. They're distinct questions. But the logic of the sphere is not separate. They are connected, logically.
So I'm talking about the question, why the Earth is a sphere and is the Earth a sphere? Are those not two separate questions, yes or no?
They are distinct questions, but linked logically.
Okay, so they're two different, yes?
He's already said
they're distinct questions, but I know because anyway, go ahead.
You're trying to connect them under the table. I'm sorry, there is no connection.
No, I cited Sir Isaac Newton, who spoke to the issue directly. So I mean, it's not my fault.
And I'm sorry that you're misapplying him. I'm sorry that you're misapplying him. It's okay.
No,
continue to quote from the great minds of our place. Hopefully some of their credibility will rub off on you, I'm sure.
A quotation is not an interpretation.
You quoted somebody who died in 1700 something. Okay, that's great. By the way, that's not logical positivism. Logical positivism is when you say that the only things that are cognitively meaningful for knowledge can only be through some kind of analytical or experimental or evidential empiricism. That's not what you were saying for logical positivism. Anyways, Ken Schaefer, $5. Hang on, let me get through the super chats. My eyes show this was for $50, more accurate than that, or more accurate than what computer showed SI. So he had a super chat of $5, but his eyes said they were $50 because, you know, refraction. Now, Ronnie D, 1970. This is my favorite super chat so far. Mr. ID plus Cy10 plus Lou Jack of Flat Earth.
Oh, this one's my favorite. James says, $5, Kyle, you look like you need a drink. Have one on me. Thank you. The first time I had anal sex wasn't this painful.
What
was for your date.
Damn.
Fuck. I don't know how to recoup from that one. Jamie Sislow, $5. And this is a great question. Does Southern Israelite wear glasses?
Yes.
That's a really good question. Okay, so right. You trust your glasses and to work for you.
So you trust the lenses of your glasses, but not the lenses of a telescope?
Based upon
I've
optics.
I've spoken to this directly already. I have no problem with using optics when it comes to terrestrial realms. When you're looking in the celestial bodies, that's where the problem comes in. That's not just my opinion. That was the opinion of the body of academics who were at Galileo's presentation.
So he agrees with ships disappearing over the horizon is evidence for a round Earth then. Thank you, because those are terrestrial.
So you're dealing with that. So you are siding with academic lenses.
The problem there is atmospheric refraction,
which we already accounted for.
Let me go ahead and make sure I am following this logic appropriately that you just presented, mm-hmm. Southern. Mm-hmm. You trust the lenses in your glasses and lenses used for terrestrial things because you can then go and physically verify the object.
Right.
But when it, at which you are attributing to a bunch of academic cunts who have all been dead for 300
Percy Brickman's
years.
An academic cunt. The head of math and physics at Harvard. That's precious.
Hey, one question. Wait, let me ask one quick question. Does he believe the Earth is flat?
The academic.
Does he, the answer is
no.
No, they don't. Hold on.
Then why are you quoting him to help you? He's so smart. He thinks the Earth is not flat.
Wait.
If he thinks the Earth is not flat, and he's that smart, right? Then why are you quoting him for something else? Because he's obviously smarter than you, and he knows the Earth isn't flat. So whatever he's thinking isn't giving him reason to think the Earth is flat, right?
No.
Quote mining.
The academic
is
community
really
does not say they know for true what the nature of the universe is. They say that the heliocentric model is a simpler mathematical model to use. They do not say they know exactly what the universe is.
I think a professor of mathematics can easily determine what the shape of the Earth is with basic data points like the ones we've been able to gather.
So then why did he say then that we know the distance?
Dude, we got to get through the super test. Let's get going here. We got to get going through this. Sabria, $5. Can we currently escape Earth's orbit? What property do satellites need at 4,000 degrees Fahrenheit to go through the thermosphere? We've addressed this a million times. Reg, you just want to throw that out there real quick. This is like... flatter question.
Sure thing. So the question is, why don't satellites burn up even though the gases are at 2,000 degrees Celsius or some shit like that?
Yeah, it's about 2,000, 3,000
okay.
Celsius.
Really yeah, 2,000, 3,000 degrees Celsius. Yeah, somewhere around there. I forget the exact temperature. But the reason that the satellites don't burn up is because in order for that energy to be transferred to the object, you need to have something carrying that energy. And unfortunately, the air is so thin that the only thing carrying those energy is individual molecules. So basically, you're trying to attack a tank with a pea shooter. It doesn't have enough energy to transfer to cause sufficient energy transfer, which would heat up the object. It's individual molecules. When compared to the entire satellite, that's hardly anything at all.
Right. You're at a vacuum. So it's low density. So your kinetic energy across the system is going to be very, very low in imparting any kind of energy from one thing to another because is like the difference between sticking your hand in a fire and sticking in an oven. This oven's not going to harm you as much as it is being a fire or like boiling water because it's less dense.
Seven minutes.
All right, Jamie Sislow, I'm hurrying. $10. The last comment, Southern Israelite is what you made. Southern Israelite is what you made. Hashtag bitch made. Reds wasn't needed. So I think he's saying that the last comment you made at that time already made you a bitch made. Two-step, 952, $10. Southern Israelite, you are the most intellectually dishonest debater I've ever seen. I had the misfortune to listen to. Enjoy the mushroom-shaped bruise on your stupid face. Hashtag bitch made. Well, that's pretty vile. I like that.
Damn.
No concepts too.
Gotta love that hatred. Great show that $2. Gotta love it.
Great. Eyes of Thought, $5. Would Isaac Newton say the Earth was sphere or flat? He would say that it was sphere. This is why I don't know why he's quoting anybody. Everyone he's quoting, all these brilliant scientists that he is admiring, all of them know the Earth is round. How do you explain that? All of them. No, the Earth is round, and yet he's quoting them. It's amazing. ESO.
They say mathematically describing the Earth as round.
Breaking news. I just got a message in the live chat saying that Matt Powell just tweeted to me, "You're disgusting. Check your DMs." Hey, Matt Powell, go fuck yourself, you closet homosexual.
Hey, Matt Powell, go suck a bag of dicks, man. Oh, yeah. Shit.
My Cortana right, guys,
just
I got to run.
I just say, Matt Powell, my Cortana.
And let's do the close.
Right,
let's
do the close.
Matt Powell, suck a bag of dicks. What?
Let's do the closing. Let's do the closing. He's got to run, so let's do the closing.
You guys are your closing. After you leave, we can finish the super chats.
Okay. Go. Yep. So the closing here.
Southern. So go ahead and give your closing to wrap it up since you are in a rush to get out.
All right. Yeah, I got to go to work. Sorry. All right. So tonight I gave 9 arguments for the Earth being flat, and I don't think any of them were addressed at all. And I showed that the Earth was flat due to our experiences. My opponent could do and say nothing. I argued that their gravity is impossible. I gave arguments against the tides. I gave arguments about the nature of the sun and thermal expansion. My opponent could say nothing. I mentioned the taboo conspiracy, Felix Baumgartner footage. My opponent conceded. I mentioned water seeking its own level. I got nothing from that. Air pressure proves the firmament, and I showed how you just look at static. You look at pressure in a static water environment. You have, let me see the exact words for that. Sorry. Pressure and depth in a static fluid. You can Google that. It's all over the place. You can see that pressure gradients do not preclude, equilibrium does not preclude pressure gradients. The sun dog and the perihelic circle prove the firmament. I got nothing. Dog cam sport, the heat spot. My opponent actually admitted he conceded. He did not know. He did not study it enough to speak on it. No north-south circumnavigation and the solar analemma. Again, nothing. So, I mean, it's 9-0 from what I'm looking at right here. This was a fucking slaughter. So I'm done. My opponent mentioned equatorial mounts. I gave numerous arguments against equatorial mounts with the nature of telescopes, the nature of the way that the stars move and their altitude and declination from Ptolemy's Almagest, the Sly-Sparkane, the distance to the sun observation. I quoted Piercy Brigmon, who in his work stated that we have a 0.1% assurance that we know the distance to the stars and to the celestial bodies, except for the moon. He made an exception with the moon. To the drone footage, he's just trying to overrule academic sources on that. Pontchartrain with the hump thing, which contradicts his whole model. I think he may have made an argument that I was falsely using GPS information on that. I'll take a look at that. Boats over horizon, no tilt. And I actually mentioned how the emblem of the boat actually does a mirroring effect on the water in red zone footage, which, again, I got nothing from that. So I chalk this up as a complete fucking slaughter. So I'm out.
Oh, it was a slaughter. I'll give you that. We absolutely agree with the slaughter. Reds, you would like to give your closing? So. All
right. Sure thing. Okay, so let's go ahead and bring this up. I want to thank Southern Israelite for a very easy victory for myself. This was actually one of the easiest debates. I would say even easier than Jaronism, so you can hang out with him in the corner. He's still crying from Friday the 13th. The question for tonight's debate was very simple. Which model best comports with reality, round Earth or flat Earth? Well, in this debate, we all had the opportunity to hear what Southern Israelite had to say. So with that, I ask the following. Has he presented a valid workaround for the contradictions that plague his model? Has he presented evidence how his model comports with reality? Has he shown how his model can make predictions? I would go ahead and say that, yeah, he put up a good fight, but then I would be lying to myself and also to you fine people in the audience. I'm sure I'm not the only one that was disappointed in Southern's performance, because in this debate, he presented nothing of value. He wasted time spewing about how smart he was, while, in professing himself to be wise, became a fool. So instead of giving us what we came here for, evidence for a flat Earth that anybody can verify, he decided to give us appeal to authority, authorities that are not engaged in this debate and were not referenced in my opening, kindergarten philosophy, derailment, burden shifting, cherry picking of bits of science while ignoring the whole, because the scientific consensus among people that are a lot more gifted than the people he mentioned all agree that the Earth is round, misunderstanding of gravity and how it's relevant to what I brought up when it came to the equatorial telescope mount, which, by the way, he had nothing against the geometry. Basically, he said that you can't trust anything that cameras show us, then use them as evidence against me. So special pleading fallacy. And he will go ahead and quote Newton all day long, but ignore the implications of Newton's canon. Yeah, I know. Why do we ask for such things as evidence? And why does he constantly reference people that are currently dead or disagree with them actively? Yeah, because in reality, the evidence and reality gathered from that evidence can speak for itself. It doesn't need your books that misrepresent it to speak for it. I mean, come on. I'm nobody special, Mr. Southern. I am just some no-name from Florida who's ugly as fuck. And if I can get this, you should be able to get this too. So either you're not as smart as you think you are, or you're fucking lying to us. Either way, you lose it here. If you want to think the Earth is flat, that's fine. You are more than welcome to believe in a contradictory model. You are more than welcome to believe in a model that can't make accurate predictions. You are more than welcome to believe that everybody is lying to you despite the evidence to the contrary. In other words, you are more than welcome to be wrong on your own time. But until you are able to win a debate like this, I recommend that you not only shut the fuck up, but study up on what modern-day scientists, modern-day philosophers, and modern-day engineers have to say on the matter. Get it into this century, motherfucker. It has been a slaughter. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, guys, for a very spirited debate. I know Steve and I have been silent. That will change in the after show. I just want to say one thing that I learned tonight. This transcends what we saw tonight. Transcends not only flat Earth, but in every kind of situation where we have debate. Somebody thinks that they know something, and they really don't. When it comes down to it, they bite off a little bit more than they can chew. And when they get into the actual arena, so to speak, and have these types of discussions, and they're shown what they don't know, rather than learning from that or trying to take an example from that, they declare themselves a victory, a slaughter. And there's a similar individual who does that. He will declare victory when the entire time all he was doing was preaching to his own choir. And so for that reason, Southern Israelite, you are officially the G-man of flat Earth. And
thank you.
Good night, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, S.I., you know, obviously you looking into some of these things and you seem to know the terminology, but I got to tell you, I don't think that a lot of people would actually think that you know how to do the concepts. Have you ever worked any of these problems? I mean, you say you're taking physics, but have you ever done any work with physics as far as doing like free body diagrams or figuring out any kind of optical things? Or, I mean, have you actually worked with the problems themselves?
No, and that's irrelevant. It's an appeal to intimidation, Steve, and okay. You know it. You're a better man than that. Come on.
First of all, that's not an appeal to. Okay, first of all, you keep throwing out these words that you don't know what they mean. You threw out a hom. You got it wrong. Okay, you don't know the difference between an invective and an unhomonym. They're two different, completely different things.
Dave's got it wrong. We got to do
it. All right, but anyways, we're going to be doing. We're going to be finishing these up. These super chats here on the after show. I am going to with Kyle and a whole bunch of other people. We're going to be going through what SI had put forth for negative evidence, because none of it was evidence for a flat Earth. And we're going to be explaining to the audience how we got all this stuff wrong, because there was just multiple fractal levels of wrongness just compounded by wrongness. It ended up being potato. So we're going to try to suss all that out in the after show. If you want to join us, by all means, just message me. But that's going to start about 9 o'clock. So we got to get through these super chats, because there are some pretty large ones in here. Okay.
All right,
so
out.
Real quick. All right. ESO, $2. SI wins due to rules of so bad it's great. Fair enough. I don't. I know what. We'll give Steve, him a win because they're so bad. It was entertaining.
Steve.
What's it? Yeah.
This is God.
Yes, God.
Can you do the super chats in the after show, please?
Let me just read one then.
Okay.
Yeah, we had one for actually $100.
Okay.
$100. Thank you, Ricky, very much for a $100 super chat. Arguments from personal incredulity. What a sham, no evidence of flat Earth. And I think that's the perfect way to end it, because I think that's not only, again, appreciative of the highest super chat, that's the most spot on one. So that's
the we'll see you in the after show. Appeal to Potato is the title. Appeal to Potato in 15 minutes.
Non sequitur, your facts are uncoordinated.